It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this, the 18th day of December 2020. 3 days remain in autumn on Moray Monday. Well, that'll be the solstice, and then the days will become longer. Well, the daylight will become longer and more as we head into the teeth of winter. There are 13 days remaining in this godforsaken plague year, and 33 days until the first day of 2021. Yes. Of course, the reminder obtains, and that is the fact that the special runoff elections for two Senate seats in Georgia take place on January the 5th. Early voting is already underway. And thanks to all of you who have responded to various challenges here to help to provide funding to the campaigns of both Ossoff and Warnock. Thank you so very much. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so thanks go out to our subscribers for the 18th day of the month. That would mean thanks to Grace, and thanks to Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Stephen. And thank you to a friend, an international friend who wishes to remain anonymous. So here we are at the end of the week. And I can happily announce that Mark in Boulder has offered up Mark in Boulder's Drop a Boulder on the Old Year $150 challenge for this evening. So Mark is standing by with $150 to double your money. So that if we raise $150 tonight, then by golly, we'll be done fundraising for the week. And that is nothing short of fantabulous. Thank you, Mark. Drop a boulder on the old year, courtesy of Mark in Boulder. Of course, the usual, the PayPal interface is at headon.live. We can't really post to, if you prefer Venmo, and some people do, it's at bob-kincaid-1. That's how we get, that's the Venmo handle. Mm-hmm. Did I do the hi, I'm Bob part? Well, I am. I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is Friday on the front porch. A reminder, if you'd like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable conversation that happens here on the Horn every Friday, well, there's a button up at headon.live, and it will take you immediately into the Skype group if you wish to participate this evening. We'll start the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, in about 55 minutes or so. And they're always something fantastic. So I have no doubt this one will be, too, and I'm looking forward to it. Where to begin? Where to begin with this evening? There's the Russian hack, which is truly significant. They managed to hack into just about everything of any importance we have, and we can presume that what was any information that was on what they hacked is no longer secure. They actually hacked the people who were supposed to prevent hacking. But it's worth remembering that this didn't happen in a vacuum. This happened because a guy who was, well, guy, no, a misanthrope who was elected by about 1.3 million people in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, Stan, rules the entire nation. And it was he who chose to ignore cybersecurity legislation that was competently passed and sent over to the Senate by the House. I'm talking, of course, like about Moscow Mitch McConnell. Yeah, the McConnell did it. In the drawing room. With the lead pipe. And so we got that story out there. And the other bombshell via Business Insider. Great heavenly days. I mean, this is kind of, well, I guess you're not, I guess we can't be surprised anymore. There's nothing that's surprising. But the bottom line on it is that, well, it turns out, because grifter's going to grift, Flavio got to that idea on Facebook before I did. Grifter's going to grift, and so it turns out, in an exclusive at Business Insider, Jared Kushner was behind the creation of a shell corporation. I don't mean like Shell Oil. No, a shell corporation that funneled about half of the Trump campaign war chest, that is about $617 million, into the pockets of Trump family and friends. Mike Pencilneck Geek was in on the graft and lined his pockets. Mike Pencilneck Geek also took his, I'm sure he did, COVID vaccine today. I didn't even feel a thing, he said. Mother. But, no, the Trump family got something like $617 million out of the $1.26 billion war chest that the MAGOT campaign had. And it paid top advisors and family members. And it hid money from prying eyes. Yeah. Business Insider reporting. When Kushner and others created the company in April 2018, they picked Trump's daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, to become its president, Vice President Mike Pence's nephew, John Pence, as its vice president, and Trump campaign CFO, Sean Dolman, as its treasurer and secretary. This has all been revealed via an anonymous source. So, thanks, by the way, to Joy in Ann Arbor and to Asa for bringing this to my attention. They're gonna graft and steal and cut purse and foot pad and all the way to the bitter end. The report says the mysterious company caused consternation among other campaign staffers who had no idea how it was spending money, and the Campaign Legal Center filed a civil complaint with the Federal Election Commission in June, accusing the Trump campaign of laundering $170 million largely through it. And the company was called American Made Media Consultants Corporation and American Made Media Consultants LLC. they denied, well, the campaign spokesman actually denied that AMMC had paid Laura Trump or Pence's nephew, John Pencil Neck Geek, for being on its board. That's one of those little tells. No, we didn't pay him for being on the board. We didn't pay her for being on the board. No, hell no. We paid them for keeping their fucking mouth shut. Mm-hmm. No surprise there. Hopefully it will at least be subject to some level of investigation at some point in time, as long as we don't decide to look forward and not back. Oh, just even mentioning that phrase gives me the fan tods. And this, just because it's a little humorous, well, kind of. Oh, my God. Darlene just sent me this. Darlene in Connecticut. There's been an official announcement of what we will call members of Space Farce. Darlene noting, LOL, and yeah. The Kushner grift with campaign funds is big. What a heist. Oh, it's robbery. It's huge. But no, members of the Space Farce will be called Guardians. So now we'll have soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Guardians of the Galaxy. There's no creativity to them whatsoever. Guardians? How about Vacuum Command? No. Then you'd have caricatures of people in spacesuits with the great big Kirby sweepers. Spacemen? You know, we used to call people who went into space astronauts, which means, you know, star sailor, when you sort out the meanings of the word, but Guardians. Rocket Raccoon First Class, reporting for duty. Personally, I'm a Groot fan when it comes to Guardians. Although I like Drax pretty well, too. His sense of humor suits me. I am Groot.
I am Trump. I am Trump.
Okay, there's an idea. Ooh, that's cowbell worthy. Cowbell, or early cowbell for Billable Rick. Space farts. Let's call them Q-dets. You got it banging on all eight this afternoon, Billable. And, for Agnes, Lee reminds us, happy birthday, Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt, stick of butter. Brad Pitt, stick of butter. Yeah. And to get us started this evening, Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, my father ironically made a very good argument why we need Ossoff and Warnock in the Senate. Things with the economy will go back to how they were with Obama if we let Dems win the Senate. Okay, good. The economy will grow a lot then. I'm beginning to think Republicans are stupid. Beginning? Kyle, beginning? Beginning, really? In my best Yosemite Sam voice, maggots is so stupid. Yes, Rocket Rack only to find Gideon's Bible. Thank you, Randy Radar. Nice Beatles reference there. Somewhere in the Black Hills of South Dakota, there lived a boy named Rocky Raccoon. Yeah. Steve in New York says, how about calling them canceled with the money going for food, housing, and education? Well, there's that, too. I mean, yeah. Subject line grift. Matt in San Francisco says, so, if you take the over $200 million from the election lawyer grift and combine it with the campaign's $600-plus million grift, we're getting close to a $1 billion grift. Terrible person and president. Excellent con man. Oh, without a doubt. And Kushner, too. But, of course, remember, Kushner, you know, comes from a family of grifters. And if you do the math, that means that they can pay off the $400 million loan payment coming due for Trump and still have a couple of hundred million walking around money left over. I wonder how the little people live. Yeah. Guardians? Asks Robert in Australia. Guardians is the name of a recent Russian science fiction film. The Guardians in question being a Russian version of the Avengers X-Men. Well, howdy-do. It's almost like Vladimir Putin's just calling the shots. Oh, wait, never mind. Forget I said that. And then, as to the music that was playing before the program started, Silent R. Lamar says, when I hear Chet Atkins' Mountain Melody, I think of you driving around town. Hell, I'm just sick that way. Okay. I wasn't playing any music. That just happens when there's no programming going on the stream. And now, of course, to get us well and truly going. Oh, damn it. Where'd it go? Ah, there we are. And thank you, Lou, for the January 5th reminder. We already, for once, I actually got to it at the beginning of the program. And so, here we go. Bob! Deep throat. Well, I woke up this morning, Joey says, and the first thing that came to on my television was Mike Six Cents None the Dumber Pence just praising our wonderful president, Donald J. Trump, for his Warp Speed initiative that'll save so many lives just before taking the vaccine. I literally wanted to vomit and throw something at the TV. Oh, and by the way, on this day back in 2008, Mark Felt died. And Felt was better known to most of us as Deep Throat during the Watergate years. Oh, look, there's Giraffe.
Hey, Mike Pence. Mike, you stupid moron. It's over, dude. Your boy Trump lost the election, so get off your knees, you spineless piece of shit. Stand up like a man and stop deep-throating Trump. Mike, the only thing that is warped is your brain, and the only thing about speed relative to Trump are directly related to all the drugs he does.
And that ought to kill dinner in most of the time zones all at one time.
Mother.
Then I pick up the local paper, Joey continues, and in the editorials is some local guy by the name of Russell Militia. That's his real name. You just can't make this stuff up, and Russell was trying to do the Trump hustle. The progress on vaccines by Pfizer, Moderna, and AstraZeneca in our battle with COVID-19 is a tribute to our president, Donald Trump, and Operation Warp Speed. However, I'm 100% certain that he'll never be given credit for all the good he's done in preventing the virus. Hey, Russell, dumbass. I will gladly give Trump credit for Warp Speed and all these vaccines when idiots like you give Trump all the credit for fucking up this entire pandemic in the first place, i.e. not testing and tracing, not telling people to wear masks and socially distance, firing the Obama pandemic team, and firing two key critical scientists in Wuhan. Now we have over 300,000 people dead, 310,000 plus dead, and we're looking at probably 400,000 dead a day now. And Trump deserves all of the credit for that. Yes, he does, Jeffrey. Yes, he does. Jeffrey adds, I was wondering if there was any way we could quarantine these maggots as the Trump Ebola is spreading rapidly. Good point, Giraffe. And to think this country once quarantined Japanese people just being Japanese. Yeah. That's true. Executive Order 9066 on this day continued the internment of Japanese Americans. Maybe Biden can sign Executive Order 999 and send the maggots to Alaska. Yeah, very good, Jeffrey. And speaking of Alaska, on this day in 1965, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, 1865, not 19. Sometimes there's a stutter, you know, 8's next to 9 and mistakes happen. On this day in 1865, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution abolishing slavery was declared in effect by Secretary of State William H. Seward. Yes, Jeffrey. Jeffrey with a follow-up tale.
Yeah, Secretary of State William H. Seward, who graduated first in his class from Union College, did declare the 13th Amendment in effect officially in the fall, but this was not Seward's folly, F-A-L-L-Y, folly, F-O-L-L-Y. Seward's folly was purchasing Alaska from the Russians, and Alaska eventually wrought us Sarah Palin. Thank you, Jeffrey. Jeffrey really likes to follow this folly stuff.
On this day in 1966, How the Grinch Stole Christmas by Dr. Seuss was brought to life by CBS with Boris Karloff narrating. And the latest version with Grinch McConnell is running in real life on any television near you. McConnell had the unmitigated gall to say a relief bill was not happening because of pure politics. No, Mitch, you motherfucker. Both sides are not playing politics, just your side doing so by trying to once again give all the riches to the wealthiest Americans and be a Grinch to the middle class and the poor. There are people out here going hungry and homeless while you Grinch McConnell are playing stupid reindeer games, R-E-I-G-N. Okay. Then again, on this day in 1978, Cleveland, Ohio declared bankruptcy. Take note, Mitch McConnell, because of you and yours attempting to defund public utilities, including the defunding of the police, numerous cities may be going bankrupt sometime soon. And on this day in 1892, we're just bouncing all over the timeline, the Nutcracker debuted in Russia. And speaking of a cracker who's nuts, on January 5th, please help us get rid of David Perfidy. Oh, that's pro. David Perfidy. Perfidy? Perfidy? We need help in Georgia, even if you can simply come out and wave a sign at an intersection. That'd be a huge help. Just Google Gwinnett, Fulton, DeKalb, Douglas, or any county in the greater Atlanta area and put mobilized beside the county, and you'll be instructed how to get involved. Joey and Giraffe will be there again this weekend, and we need more boots on the ground as the latest poll shows Purdue and Loeffler up by 1 point. But a million ballots... A million absentee ballots have already been cast. Don't know how that'll break out. Remember, Nitwit Nero doesn't like it when people vote.
Vote by mail schemes.
And so hopefully the Republicans aren't doing that, because stupid maggots. I hope that's a good sign. So... Keep it up, and I can't thank Joey and Giraffe enough for what they're doing. They're literally walking the walk. Also on this day in 1987, Ivan Boesky was sentenced to 3 years in jail for his part in this largest insider trading scheme of all time. So let's put Kelly Unlawfuler in a confinement camp, not Congress, for the insider traitor that she is, insider traitor. And finally, since this is Friday on the front porch and the Keebler elves who live in a tree are always present, let's talk about a lady in California who lived in a tree, as on this day in 1999, Julia Butterfly Hill came down after spending 2 years living in a 180-foot-tall, 600-year-old California redwood tree nicknamed Luna to prevent loggers of the Pacific Lumber Company from cutting it down. During the two-year time when she was living in the tree, she would visit the locals, and most of the locals liked her, but a few... Yes, Jeffrey. Yes, a few of the locals thought when she visited them that she was... Well, you know, the locals thought that when she left the tree and visited them that she was out of her tree. Ugh. Well, that was crazy, Jeffrey. But Julia Butterfly Hill took good care of the tree they called Luna, and she would often spray incense all over the bottom of the tree to avoid the infestation of insects, and especially ticks. Jeffrey notes,
yes, Julia took good care of the tree as she was very afraid of insects and especially ticks because she did not want her wonderful tree, Luna, to become a...
Oh, God, wait for it.
To become a Luna tick.
This has been Joey's Journal for Friday on the Front Porch, the 18th day of December, 2020. With Giraffe getting high all around the peach trees in Georgia. He's in high peaches. Peach tree challenge on the table. Same as usual, if the Horn family can kick in $100 tonight, then Joey and Giraffe will donate $50 to Warnock and Ossoff. That's a huge challenge. So you've got a chance to do extra super double plus good alongside the Drop a Boulder on 2020 challenge, courtesy of Mark and Boulder. If we can raise $150, then, well, Mark will double it. We'll be done with fundraising. And you will have also, you will also have provided $50 each to the Warnock and Ossoff campaigns, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe. Thank you both so very much. Or all three of you, really. Joey, Giraffe, and Mark in Boulder. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Kyle in Kentucky Stan, not holding, not hiding his light beneath a bushel, says, "Fuck you, Mitch McConnell, you traitorous turtle fuck." Russell Militia, ha 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 ha, courtesy of Kyle. And yes, there were cowbells for Joey's excellent journal for today. 5.5 is not enough. All right, a full one. Billable Rick says, "I especially like maybe Biden can sign Executive Order 999 and send the maggots to Alaska." Herb Kane is smiling up at Giraffe from that reverse pineapple forest in the great beyond. Reverse pineapple forest. Now there's a new concept. Yeah. The Guardians of the... I didn't realize that. Randy Radar explaining the Guardians of the Galaxy were the Green Lantern Corps' masters. Interesting. So, we're off to a pretty solid start, I'd say. And hopefully we will knock down the fundraising and know that we have helped out Warnock and Ossoff. And again, go ahead and join up in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Room with, by using the button over at headon.live. Just click on it, and you'll be right there. Good gang together in the chat room in anticipation of Friday on the Front Porch. If you pop by, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Original Sailor Chick and our buddy Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry and Timo, all gathered together and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, while he is a third stage guild navigator, has elected not to fold space to become Man Cave. It must be gray and Northern California again. God knows it's gray here. I've managed to get the temperature of the fabulous horn studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion up to all of 57 degrees. Got my little waffle weave hoodie, and I think I'll make it through the program pretty much okay. Ah, yes, the reverse pineapple forest. Steve in New York says, where the people aren't up in the trees, but the trees are up in the people. Yeah. Oh, damn, you guys are good this evening. Friday on the Front Porch ought to be a dandy. They most usually are. So, what else? Well, plenty. Out of Texas, our friend Beth in Dallas shared this one from Texas Monthly, which is a damn good publication. The article, "Texas Wedding Photographers Have Seen Some Shit. They Know What You Did This Summer." This is what it's like. Texans like Beth and Texas T and any number of others could tell you. The wedding photographer had already spent an hour or two inside with the unmasked wedding party when one of the bridesmaids approached her. The woman thanked her for still showing up, considering, quote, everything that's going on with the groom. This is where the wedding photographer's pink little ears perked up. When the photographer asked what she meant by that, the bridesmaid said the groom had tested positive for the coronavirus the day before. She was looking for me to be like, oh, that's crazy, like I was going to agree with her that it was fine, the photographer recalls. So I was like, what are you talking about? And she was like, oh, no, 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 don't freak out. He doesn't have symptoms. He's fine. Oh! So bridesmaid had never heard of asymptomatic spread. She didn't realize, I guess, because, well, Texas maggot, didn't realize that you can that's when you spread the disease most, and it's a hateful word to use in this situation, but most efficiently. The photographer, on the other hand, has asthma and three kids at home. And the photographer bugged out with her assistant before the night was over, and it was not a pleasant scene. The wedding planner said it was the most unprofessional thing she'd ever seen. Bridesmaids accused her of heartlessly ruining an innocent woman's wedding day. She recalls one bridesmaid telling her, I'm a teacher. I have 14 students. If I'm willing to risk it, why aren't you? Another one said everyone was going to get COVID eventually, so what was the big deal? The friend of the bride, who'd spilled the beans, cried about being the worst bridesmaid ever. That's what she was worried about. Well, the photographer left, and then she canceled all the Thanksgiving plans with family. She sent her children to relatives' homes so that they wouldn't get sick, and got in touch with all the brides who had contracted for her to shoot their weddings in the immediate future, that she would be farming the work out to other photographers. And then, sure enough, a few days later, she started to feel crummy, and then she tested positive for the coronavirus. She told the couple who had gotten her sick about it, but they really didn't care. They didn't offer to compensate her for the test, nor did they even apologize for spreading the disease to her. And this is going on all over Texas. It's going on all over the maggot states and some of the non-maggot states. Because for some reason or another, we just seem unable to convey to people how dangerous and deadly this pandemic is. As Stockton Larry inquires in the chat room, will those newlyweds survive their honeymoon and go out with a bang? All right, that's jingle worthy. And this Texas Monthly article points out that checking out the hashtag Texas Wedding shows hundreds of posts from recent nuptials from all over Texas. Most of the photographs show no masks, no Purell pumps, and nothing else to indicate that anybody is taking any sort of precautions against the spread of the disease. Jesus. And what a hard place to be in. Wedding photographers, by definition, have to be at weddings. Weddings are things that probably shouldn't be taking place during a pandemic. And one photographer pointed out, saying, I think most people's intentions are good. It's just when you get a group of people together with alcohol and socializing, at a certain point, everyone just kind of lets loose and it gets a little dicey. And told the story of one event where, at the end of the evening, the groom came up to her and was shouting his gratitude over the sounds of the DJ. I love you, ma'am. He was excited and happy and saying thank you, and I just felt spit land on my face. Ooh. Shades of the hillbilly with the tobacco crumb-covered tongue. Yeah. There's an account in here of a South Texas wedding with about 100 people. And one of the people said to one of the other photographers, oh, you don't have to wear a mask. You don't have to worry. None of us have the Rona. And then at the reception, hundreds of guests lined up for a non-COVID compliant group dance. A group dance, yes. Old people, young people. And they got together for a grand march. And the photographer was horrified to see, quote, tunnels of people running through with each other, high-fiving and yelling at each other and touching. And not even the bartenders were wearing a mask. Another wedding, 6 out of 14 or so people tested positive. Well, it kind of sounds like Texas weddings are vying with that one disease-laden wedding in New York City for the title of most maliciously stupid people in the United States of America. But my God, that's a take-a-number list. So, closing the article, the woman who shot the wedding and got the Rona said, "I have children. What if my children die?" And the bridesmaid, who was upbraiding her for leaving, said, "I understand, but this is her wedding day." Oh. I mean, it's her wedding. So what if your children die? It's her wedding. Beggar's credulity. God almighty. And so that's why every evening I try to close the program with a reminder to stay home, wear masks, gloves, wash hands, sanitize, don't touch faces, all of that. And by the way, I wanted to share with you, we had an update from Paul from Parts Unknown. And I'm sorry about that. Paul from Parts Unknown says, "I tried to call into the show using the 844, the horn number, but I couldn't get through. It kept saying your voicemail box was full and disconnecting me." Well, that's what happens when there's already somebody on the line. So I apologize for that. But Paul updates us. "I've been gearing up for Paulman production this week to get ready for the holidays. For those of you who don't know, Paulmans are a delightful holiday treat that's healthy, gluten-free, and very tasty. The almonds are blanched and then peeled by hand. They're then frozen overnight, and the ice crystals open up the pores in the almonds. They're then thawed and roasted." Remember, Paul is also a laboratory scientist, so this is almonds with science applied. "Frozen overnight, ice crystals open up the pores in the almonds. They're then thawed and roasted in sea salt and extra virgin olive oil. During the roasting process, the water boils out, sucking in the sea salt and the olive oil mixture into the almond. After roasting, the almonds are frozen again, which closes the pores as the oil contracts, leaving the flavor of the salt and olive oil all the way through the almond," and I can attest that this is true. "I wanted to put up the Paulman challenge. However, the challenge is a little different this year. Due to not having enough time to defrost the freezer, there's limited freezer space. I need to make a batch and then send it out to make room for the next batch. So I'm not offering up the yearly Paulman challenge in two parts. For this Friday, I'm offering up 2 tins of Paulmans for $50 each. The first 2 listeners to email Bob and claim them can send Bob their address, and I will mail them out to you Saturday and hope they can be there before Christmas. And actually, I think those 2 are pre-spoken for. Randy and PA for one, and Ralph's for the other. But there's still hope. Yeah, don't despair. Next week, there will be another challenge for 2 more tins for $50 each. And they'll arrive before New Year's Eve. So that's the yearly Paulman Challenge this year. I wish everyone in the Horn community a safe and healthy rest of the year." So thank you again, Paul from Parts Unknown. People talk about the Paulmans all year long, and then they, and then we eagerly await this season of the year. And, well, it's here. So thank you, Paul from Parts Unknown, and thank you for all the trouble you go to make people happy here. It's absolutely wonderful. Thank you so very much, Paul. And I hope you have happy holidays there in parts unknown. As to the weddings, well, some people can be smart about it. Dave number 11 says, our kids canceled a 200-count wedding for a group of seven. The parents, the bride, and the groom, and the officiant. They'll blow the roof off when it's safe. Not hard. No, it isn't. What we're dealing with in that Texas story is just pure, unmitigated selfishness. That's it. That's all. That's a matter of thinking about, of people thinking about themselves and not others. And that kind of goes to the core of what the problem is in this country. Whatever used to pass for a collective common decency has largely been taken out behind the barn and beaten with an axe handle by people who claim that they have traditional family moral values. It is, of course, a complete and utter fiction. Thank you, Christopher. Christopher jumped in on both the Mark in Boulder's Drop a Boulder on 2020 challenge, and along the way also helped take down the challenge for Joey and Giraffe's Peach State Challenge. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you very much indeed. We got we got $125 to go now on Mark's challenge. And that's a great start. Thank you so much. So much good. All these little offers on the table right now. Steve in New York reminds the Palmans, Katz's Deli, Schaller and Weber. Let's go, folks. Get her done. The last two, a $15 subscription and a brand new $20 subscription, gets you goodies courtesy of Steve in New York. May take a little while. Things are rather busy, but they will get to you. Randy in PA says, I've never gotten a horn premium before, and I'm looking forward to them. You will, I know you like this kind of thing, Randy. They are, the Palmans are nothing short of exquisite. And so, Ralphs and Randy have the first two tins of Palmans. And we will go from there. There will be another two tins next week. So jump in on those subscriptions. And of course, that'll apply to the, if you want, and that'll also apply to what happens with the challenge this evening. That's profound. God, so much stuff. This morning when he was getting the vaccine, Mike Pencilneck Geek said, building confidence in the vaccine is what brings us here this morning. And so Pence and Mother, otherwise known as the first Karen, And Surgeon General Jerome Adams all got the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine over at the annex of the White House. Yeah, there's only one, and then the problem started. Because he's desperate to take credit for things that he had nothing to do with, Nitwit Nero tweeted early today that the Moderna vaccine had been overwhelmingly approved, distribution to start immediately. But of course, since it came from Donald J. Trump, the J stands for just a big old liar. It wasn't true. The Moderna vaccine was recommended for emergency use approval by the Vaccine Advisory Panel, but the Food and Drug Administration still hasn't given it the green light because that was scheduled for today anyway. And while he was babbling about taking the vaccine, other people taking the vaccine, COVID Caligula doesn't have any plans to take it because he says that he's immune forever because he's a moron. White House press secretary Kay Leave Mac Anytime You Want said,
he will receive the vaccine as soon as his medical team determines it's best, but his priority is frontline workers, those in long-term care facilities.
Bullshit, because it's his VA that was throwing out extra vaccines, like we talked about last night, yesterday's program. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Cucky Tucky, you know, Fucker Carlson over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is doing his best to get more people killed, telling his audience of mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks, it feels false because it is. It's too slick. Yeah. And so there will be dead people on Tucker Carlson's account. Because, of course, Jesus. So all of these things come together to remind us that it's not going to get particularly better anytime particularly soon. We've just got to be tough. We got to be strong. And we have to continue to observe all the necessary things that that living through a pandemic require. The masks, the sanitizer, the hand washing, the social distancing, the not going out into places where you're likely to pick it up because the whole damn country is a hot spot now. And, of course, on our side of the aisle, we're looking for help to come from a Biden administration that we hope, there's that dangerous word again, that we hope will work harder and take this pandemic far more seriously. On the other hand, the rat fucking continues. Remember, we don't have a Secretary of Defense in this country right now. We have an acting Secretary of Defense. That's Christopher Miller, who's out there telling lies, apparently. The MAGA administration has decided to stop briefing the Biden transition team over at the Pentagon. With this hack having come on, I'm not surprised. Because it's terribly, terribly embarrassing. Nitwit Nero practically invited this hack because he refused to ever push back against his owner, his master, Vladimir Putin. And so Christopher Miller, through a Department of Defense spokesperson, claimed that the Biden transition team had agreed to a 2-week pause in briefings from the Pentagon, you know, while the Pentagon it shredders hot and running. But there was no such 2-week pause. Johannes Abraham is executive director of the Biden transition, spoke to reporters earlier today and said, there was no mutually agreed upon holiday break. In fact, we think it's important that briefings and other engagements continue during this period as there's no time to spare. On the other hand, a spokes creep over at the Department of Defense said
We're working to reschedule approximately 20 interviews with 40 officials until after January 1st.
And the Biden team really couldn't agree to it because they hadn't heard of it. They found out about all this yesterday. That, according to Abraham in a briefing call, and Johannes Abraham implored officials at the Pentagon to restart the meetings. In terms of when meetings will resume, meetings and requests for information, which are substantively interchangeable, it's our hope and expectation that that will happen immediately. Well, again, that dangerous, dangerous word, hope. Because this isn't an accident. This is typical ratfuck behavior for these jackasses. They want... Everything can burn as far as they're concerned because they are under the thumb of Nitwit Nero. Yeah, they cut off the briefings yesterday. One wonders what was said to Christopher Miller, the acting defense secretary. Well, he did issue a statement today and said, after the mutually agreed upon holiday pause, which begins tomorrow, we will continue with the transition and rescheduled meetings from today. Again, there was no mutually agreed upon pause. It was just a unilateral piece of jackassery. But they are going to go all the way to January the 20th doing as much damage as they possibly can. If this gang of psychopaths can run the death toll up to 10,000 Americans a day between now and then, they will do it. If they can hand over the nuclear codes to the Russians, they will do it. That's how horrible these people are. That's how much they do truly despise this country. I'm getting a note here. I was talking about the VA throwing away extra vaccine. My spouse had to stop the same from happening at our health system. There were billing issues with the surplus Pfizer vaccine, so the bean counter's plan was to throw it away just like the VA. My spouse was screaming at the Zoom screen, "You will not throw away lives! What are you thinking?" And miraculously, they capitulated. Well, give her a big old hug for the Horn community, please. And thank her for being relentless in her advocacy for people to be able to survive this damn thing. Give her, please give her our biggest thanks. Heartfelt thanks. Oh, and hey, this is excellent. We are now only 45, no, we are now only... $95 away from finishing Mark in Boulder's Drop a Boulder on 2020 challenge. Jack in Shreveport said, I'll put this toward the Mark in Boulder challenge since this morning I saw a Weather Channel reporter talking to a Professor Jacob about aerosols in the cold weather and how they'll hang in the air with virus stuff. Virus doesn't and won't exist only in spit and snot and freeze and fall to the ground safely. Absolutely. Thank you, Jack, and thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you both so very much. And you both just doubled your money, hopefully, if we can finish the challenge. So we're getting closer there. Oh, and if there's rat fuckery going on inside the administration, well, there's more coming. You know, the House of Representatives doesn't have a damn thing to say about whether cabinet nominees are confirmed. That doesn't stop these maggots from being the shitbirds that they are. What was that word Thomas used? Fart jackals? Yeah. Fart jackals, shit weasels. Oh, enter James Comey, representative from Kentucky, stage ultra-right. He's the ranking minority member of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. And he's put Secretary of State nominee Anthony Blinken, Director of National Intelligence nominee Avril Haines, Homeland Security Secretary nominee Alejandro Mayorkas, and Office of Management and Budget Director nominee Neera Tanden in his sights. And they've sent out a request for documents and records. And wait for it. Get the hockey puck. You're going to laugh a lot when you... the reason they want these records is they're concerned about conflicts of interest. Oh, yeah. They're concerned about conflict. Oh, man. You just can't make this stuff up. No. There's no let up to it. Concerned about conflicts of interest. They've turned their backs on monstrous amounts of graft and corruption for 4 years, but we're worried about a conflict of interest. Ooh, doggies. Me too. That's hilarious. Writing to Ron Klain, Biden's choice for chief of staff, which is not subject to Senate approval, these maggots want to know whether Anthony Blinken's work for a consulting firm that he co-founded could be seen as disqualifying conflicts of interest. Yeah, they actually wrote that, and the paper didn't catch fire. I know. Damnedest thing, huh? By a long shot. So here we are at the top of the hour. It's time for us to head over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we... keep the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and Sparky maintains order. So let's check in there and see what's going on. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Just staying at home. The man cave's a little chilly today. We got a lot of rain the other night, and there's an effect that the water gets under the slab of that concrete slab.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes it damp in spots. And that concrete is really cold. And the whole building stays very cold. I know when you go through the door and you hit the light switch and the fluorescent lights are struggling to start because it's so cold.
And they kind of flicker and blink and.
Well, no, they're just not as bright. They're dimmer.
Ah.
So.
Yeah, best stay inside.
Well, I'd have to by 3 o'clock. It starts to get even colder out there. I mean, we only have warmth for about a couple hours a day. I mean, it builds up to, like, it was 60 today. It builds up to 1, 2 o'clock, and then it just starts going off, to getting cold. So that's why I'm not out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, where you are is not far removed from the idea of high desert, right?
No, I'm way far away from the high desert area.
Oh, okay.
I mean, high desert, like on the other side of the other side of Mount Lassen.
Okay.
Way over there. And then it runs up the straight part of the state that goes straight up to Oregon. You know, that line that goes straight up. The high desert's kind of hugs that line all the way down.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, over the years, I've been getting a master class in the geography of California, and I'm glad of it. There's a whole lot of state there.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of state.
But how many counties are there?
58.
Yeah, see, that's the part that kind of blows my mind. I guess there's a lot of wide open spaces, but that's just 3 counties more than West Virginia has.
Yeah, well, you could probably fit several counties into my county. If your West Virginia county's into mine, I'll forget the.
Oh, yeah, we could probably drive, yeah.
But, I mean, some of the biggest county in California, I think it's Riverside County.
Wow. So, I had a note from Todd in South Carolina, Stan, going back to that Texas bride story. Solid observation. The Texas bride photographer story, if true, means that a vaccine may have little impact on this pandemic as it relates to Americans. They still will not wear masks. And that's absolutely true. And Todd points out with this further harrowing detail. And in addition, when, not if, this virus mutates to be more dangerous, well, yeah.
Well, did you see Chris Christie's little public service announcement?
You mean about the Rona?
Yeah, to wear a mask?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nicole Wallace, I think it was, I was watching her, and she says, the Biden administration needs to get all kinds of famous people and even NASCAR, you know, get Dale Earnhardt Jr., somebody famous NASCAR to get the injection and to do public service spots about wearing a mask once he's in office, you know. They have to do some kind of public.
Well, yeah, in the program yesterday, I mentioned the article at The Atlantic by Jim Yon, and that's one of the topics that he raised, the fact that that the budget for actually vaccinating people and the budget for public information and advertising and all of that is pathetically low for this.
Hey, Sparky, I think it's San Bernardino County. I think Riverside is in San Bernardino County. Are you there? Oops.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I think it's San Bernardino County, not Riverside County.
I thought there was a Riverside County.
I think Riverside's in San Bernardino. But anyway, so I don't want to screw up.
Well, let's ask Dr. Google.
Yeah, but
I don't deal with Southern California.
Yes, there is a river. No, there is a Riverside County, California.
Okay, but I think San Bernardino is larger than.
It might be.
It is.
I think San Bernardino is just to the north of Riverside County.
I'm pretty sure that's the largest in the country.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. Hey, Billable Rick. What's happening, man?
Hey, doing okay. As far as Southern Cal geography, I know a little bit about it. I've been here like over 30 years, so.
Yeah, it's almost like you're from there now.
Almost. Yeah, it's like since 85. So there you go.
And they're not quite as clannish in Southern California as other places, and they don't look at you even after you've been there 30 years and say, you ain't from around here, are you?
No. I've never gotten that ever since I moved out here, really. I mean, maybe I did when I first
moved out. They don't do that in California, unless you got
weird accident. My Matador, when I was driving around with my Matador, with my Iowa plates, I probably got a few looks. But Riverside is a pretty good-sized county, but San Bernardino County is bigger. And there are, you know, the county seat of each county is the name of the county. It's Riverside, California, and then San Bernardino, California.
Okay.
I think the biggest one
Google the biggest
county in Southern Cal is maybe Imperial County, way down by San Diego. It stretches all the way to the state line with, Arizona, I guess it would be.
I plugged in what's the largest county in California by size. And it says San Bernardino County is the largest county in the contiguous United States by area, while some of Alaska's boroughs and census areas are larger. So
it's a big county, I know, Lou. So
I wonder if it's even bigger than some states. Now that I don't know. I just off the top of my head, I wonder.
Well, Riverside County's population is considerably higher than the entire state of West Virginia's.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the pop. Yeah, I just meant by size. But, I don't know what I don't know what county in the country has the most people. I have no idea.
L.A. County.
Which one?
L.A.
L.A. County.
Okay. Maybe New York, whatever New York City's in, maybe. I don't know.
I think New York City has a number of, I think they have a few different, do they have more than one county?
I don't know.
I mean, you have the boroughs. You have Manhattan, Queens. You know.
I'll take Manhattan, the Bronx, and Staten Island too. Sorry.
Staten Island.
I mean.
We'll leave Staten Island out of that. That place is full of assholes right now.
Yeah, it is.
Without any overarching principle, I just think of Pennsylvania as having lots of little towns all over the place, and like all these little subdivisions with all their each has their own police department and sheriff. So in some ways, California is lucky because they have so many fewer counties and little subdivisions. It's a lot less expensive.
Well, but the original idea behind that, Lou, was that democracy, because the framers even debated this, democracy, they weren't sure it could even be practiced on a large scale. So having all these little townships is a way of trying to have something more closely resembling participatory democracy.
Sure. There's an expense, but yeah, I'm just, whatever.
Just like the town councils up in, you know, New England and Maine and Vermont, you know, they do, that's about as close to old school Athenian pure democracy as we can get. Oh, and I need to thank Elizabeth. Thank you, Elizabeth, for jumping in. Elizabeth got us down to $70 to go on Mark in Boulder's Drop a Boulder on 2020 Challenge. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Elizabeth. So we got $70 to go on that, and that'll also qualify John Ossoff and Reverend Warnock for $50 contributions, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe. So that's all tremendous. Let's see, got a couple of emails rolling in here. See what's going on there. Brother John says, a Houston holler to y'all. Just want to say hi and hi. That's H-I and H-I-G-H. Puff, puff, pass. Right. Hi, Brother John.
Already there.
Already there. Yeah, and meanwhile, over on his channel, John Bridivo's got Beer and Bud Friday going on, I reckon.
Well, that's what I got going on, too.
That sounds like a fine idea. Let's see. Albert in Rhode Island says, NPR had an interesting story today telling about people who helped develop the vaccines. A large number of them are immigrants. Yeah. And the one of the lead developers on the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in Germany is the son of Turkish immigrants into that country.
And I read another article, a woman from Hungary was also apparently pretty heavily involved in that too.
I saw her on CNN. She was interviewed by either Don Lemon.
Yeah.
I think that's where I saw it Tuesday.
Yeah, what's that song in Hamilton, Immigrants, We Get It Done?
Yeah. Well, we're a freaking nation of immigrants, except for, you know, the original inhabitants.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump isn't. He's the Americanist American of all American Americanizing.
Yeah. Well, hell, Deb Haaland, the soon-to-be Interior Secretary, hopefully, she says she's a 35th generation American. So that means that her ancestors came across the land bridge like 700 years ago from the Bering Straits, you know, from Siberia.
700? 7,000.
Well, 35 generations is not 7,000, is it?
Well, I mean, that's when the whole Bering land bridge thing was taking place.
Yeah. So, was it that long ago? 7,000? Well, maybe 350 generations then. I think she got a decimal. She left a decimal off for calculation. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, you know, this whole anti-immigrant stuff is total bullshit, you know?
It's typical of Republicans in the modern era. Billable, I was going to mention something to you. I was communicating with our buddy John Fox in Australia overnight. Uh-huh. And just to give you an idea, and I thought of you because I know how much this stuff matters to you. You know, John's an audio engineer. And he's back working. He told me he was up to his eyeballs doing sound for a series of NXS tribute band shows between pretty much now and, well, over the weekend. So they're doing concerts. People are going and living lives and whatnot. But we can't because America fucked up.
We're Trump America, Bob. That's why. We can't have nice things.
Well, we can have them, but then we can try to have nice things, but then we create coronavirus hotspots and everybody and people die.
Right. I mean, that Texas wedding story was abhorrent. I mean, you'd think there'd be a cause of action.
What if my children die? Well, I mean, it's her wedding day.
Well, sorry. Have you heard of the duty to warn? Don't you have a duty to warn? If you got COVID, I mean, I guess that's an unsettled area, Bob, you know, because there were laws that specifically came about during the AIDS era that required people who knew they were positive for the HIV to warn their possible partners. But, you know, you'd think that you could at least expand the common law to include, you know, cause of action for, you know, getting you infected with COVID if you could show it, you know.
Well, that's part and parcel of what they want to prevent via these immunity provisions.
Oh, those are horrible. It's so ridiculous. Once those are in law, they never get reversed. They're in for good, you know?
Yeah, like capping medical malpractice. And that's horrible. Yep. Without any inflation adjustment whatsoever? I mean, geez.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You're a lawyer, aren't you, Lou, as I recall?
Yeah, and I did medical malpractice for a while, though, candidly, defense. But it was just outrageous, with the caps. So Pennsylvania went through a big battle with that. But it was a lot of Democratic contributions come from from plaintiffs' lawyers. So it was another way to whack the Democrats.
We've got a Med-Mal cap in this state, $1 million.
Do you really? Well, that's a lot. California's $250 still after all these years.
Yeah, and I think there's been initiatives to increase the limit, and they've been voted down.
Yeah, I was there when one happened. I know,
because of money and advertising, false advertising by big donors, by big corporations and wealthy individuals. You know, happens all the time.
Yes.
Propositions. Hey, Bob.
Pennsylvania, the doctors, when you made a payout, you had to sign a confidentiality agreement, so that information did not become public. So if a doctor had 10 bad lawsuits for his or her practices, nobody would ever know. I don't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Sparky. Go ahead. I'll shut up.
Well, I was going to ask Bob if you saw this. So I read the story on Facebook about your governor putting $4 million towards student athletics.
Yeah, that made me eat dirt and run rabbits. $4 million for student athletics, for, you know, athletics that aren't being played. But meanwhile, you got businesses that have collapsed or are on the verge of collapse, and yeah, you get nothing. But my God, if you can find it. Speaking of make West Virginia great, big old Governor Jim Justice. If you can find the video of him trying to put his sticker on for I got vaccinated, because they did it on the live stream, and he said, didn't even hurt at all, in no way, shape, form, or fashion. And then the nurse hands him the sticker, and he's reaching down over his left tit, trying to put the sticker on, but he can't see because his mask is covering up half of his eyes and leaving half of his mouth exposed. And finally, he gives up, and he just takes the mask off and tries to stick it on there, right there on the, I got vaccinated. God, we're, Jesus. But we got vaccine fairly quickly here, because, of course, we're a maggot state, and that's how it's being doled out. If you are sufficiently obsequious to Donald Trump, the system works a hell of a lot better for you.
Whereas Michigan is making a bunch of vaccines, and they can't even get any for right. their own use.
And again, the VA throwing vaccine away.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah, Bloomberg's got a link to how much vaccine's gone where, and how many people are getting vaccinated. I guess it's up. I saw it was on it today. I was checking to see on. California got the most doses so far.
Well, it's the biggest state that would stand to reason, yeah. I guess. Yeah,
most populated state.
Oh, yeah. And billable as to what Deb Holland said in terms of time. James in Illinois points out, Pueblo people, that's how long her people have been in that area. People moved around in the indigenous community. They were among the first to settle and take up agriculture. So okay, that makes more sense in that scope.
You know, Billable, I lived up in Rancho Cucamonga. I say up, and it's kind of up to the right on the map. And I used to, you know, mention other people. I live in L.A., and they would say, "No, you don't," because to me, it's a big splotch on the map. But they're a little persnickety out that way about who's truly in Los Angeles and who's not. At least that was my experience. It's not that they were unfriendly, but
yeah, it's a megagopolis.
I mean, Rancho Cucamonga's like, 40 miles east of L.A.? So I don't know if you could exactly call it a suburb of L.A.
Okay. Well, I used to tell people L.A., and they'd look at me like I was from Mars.
Small observation. Rancho Cucamonga's a cool little city. It's like midway pretty much between L.A. and, like, is it San Bernardino? Or it's not that far east. It's like
and of course, in years past, it was a punchline.
Yeah, I think it was
Mel Blanc.
No, when, Jack Benny.
But it was Jack Mel. Benny. But I think it was Mel Blanc's voice.
Oh, okay.
And Cucamonga.
Yeah, well, that because Jack Benny used to take a train going to Rancho Cucamonga at the beginning of his show. It's kind of like the intro, and they actually have streets named after Jack Benny and other characters on his show. And
that of course, one of my. One of my other favorite California locations is referred to at the beginning of the classic W.C. Fields film, The Bank Dick.
Don't know it.
Lompoc.
Oh, Lompoc. There you go. hey, speaking of Rancho Cucamonga, they have a minor league baseball team that I saw play.
And you know, when people like Kershaw get hurt, they go there to, you know, whatever, rehabilitate. So you can see these pros for a penny on the dollar.
Yeah, those minor league games are great. They're a lot of fun,
and it's easy to get seats and blah. You know,
and when you're up around AAA level, you're watching, you know, serious pro ball.
Well, like I said, Kershaw, when he gets hurt, he goes there to rehabilitate, and other Dodgers. So
if I recall, I think the Quakes are in the a single A league, so it's like not like, you know, big time baseball, but you know, there have been some Dodger players that have gone through there. I think they have a Dodger. I think it's a Dodgers.
It is. Yeah.
The Rancho Cucamonga Quakes. But yeah. It's a charming little town. I love it, actually. Very nice.
It is nice. I mean, I'm sure there's much better zip codes in real Los mm-hmm. Angeles. But yeah. as things go, it's, you know, it's kind of a place to raise kids and things like that.
Once upon a time, a million years ago, I helped a mother recover her child who had been disappeared, and sent the baby back home to Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Iowa because it has really broad streets, like boulevards, I believe.
Yeah, they do.
Trees line the streets. It's kind of a...
This is better. This is better than Travel with Rick Steves over on the NPR.
I think Darlene is in the room raising her hand.
Are you there, Darlene?
Yes, I am.
I'm so glad.
Hi, hey, Billable. Thanks for noticing me. Appreciate it.
I appreciate the help too, because I don't always have the hand thing up and visible.
Well, I just wanted to, you know, weigh in very quickly because I have to go clean the toilet.
Oh, fun.
So while the brushes are soaking and everything, I thought I would weigh in very quickly. I wanted to tell Steve from Georgistan that I finally ordered some soft-shell crabs from the crab place and some crab cakes, because if they get here in time, hopefully they will. That's going to be my Christmas meal, because I did not want to go through the year without having had soft shell crabs because of COVID. I didn't have the chance to have them for the summer. So.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, I'm excited too. So I just ordered half a dozen frozen and was reassured that they're clean and ready to go and not live.
You won't be disappointed, darling. I promise you. And if you are, call them. They stand by their products.
So are you gonna roll them in flour, Darlene, and pan fry them?
Yes, that's what I'm going to. Yes.
Yum.
That's what I'm going to attempt to do.
Little Old Bay wouldn't hurt it. Just to throw that out there.
Oh, okay, because I could have had the opportunity to buy some there, but I think I have some
You can get it at the grocery store a lot more cost-effective than have them sending it.
Well, and I'm thinking now, I, you know, for me, it's not presents or anything. I love the Christmas meal. That's what means Christmas to me.
Exactly.
But we also have a precious little princess in the house right now, and I find the idea of making Christmas for her absolutely charming. I mean, we haven't had a Christmas like this in a very long time.
And yeah, she sounds like a darling.
Oh, she's pure sunshine. She hollers, "Hey, I need a hug. I want a hug." So whatever you're doing, you stop everything and turn around and go give the baby a hug. And it's just
absolutely.
Oh, it's just wonderful. But no, what I was going to say is, I'm thinking, you know. Our Christmas meal involves salmon, oysters, and a standing rib of beef. And so I got to figure out if I want to take my life in my hands and drive down the mountain to Charleston to get a bushel of oysters to shuck and do what I'd like to do every year this time of year, and that's make oysters bienville. Because those things are so heavenly.
I was eyeing the oysters there on the Crab Place website. I was like, boy, that would be wonderful. But let me just start out with the soft shells and the crab cakes. But your mention of beef, I guess, is a great segue into Buddy the Beefalo, because I see Roger in the chat and wants to know. So we got a lot of, I'm kind of worried about him. We got a ton of snow dumped on us here with this last storm. As far as I know, he is still on the lam. But I did find article
that never stops being
November.
Funny. The beefalo on the lam. Sorry, just had to. Yeah.
The Yeah, the Beefalo in November 20th, there was another article that came out that basically they're calling this Beefalo, Buddy the Beefalo, essentially the police, the Plymouth Police Department's great white whale, basically, that he's Moby Dick.
From hell's heart, I stab at thee.
Well, you know, he's 1,000 pounds of apparently... And I was surprised to read this, but I guess they almost caught him. He had wandered into the corral.
They almost
got him. They almost caught him. He wandered into the corral, and I guess that the one police officer who's made it his, I don't know what you would call it, his... like goal or
mission.
Or
mission.
That's the perfect mission to get him.
That's right.
They were waiting. They were waiting for him, and they immediately ran. They could not. They ran to close the door, but he was near the. He got into the feed area of that corral, and. But he did not enter the reinforced part of the enclosure, but they ran to impound him. I guess they call it impound him, but he bolted. They said he was so fast and agile, they could not close the door fast enough. And he escaped. So he's still out there. One of the concerns is that he would cross Route 72, which is, in the same general area, and Route 72 is a major highway, and that's a very dangerous thing. If he should go on to Route 72, that's kind of concern.
One out of 12, be on the lookout for a wild bull. One out of 12, be on the lookout.
Yeah, and that's scary because you don't want to see something like that on Route 72. I've traveled that quite often, and that could spell a major accident. So anyway, I'm worried about him because we got a lot of snow. I don't know what he's going to feed on, but that could encourage him into the corral and try to consume the food that's there. They might be able to catch him.
Well, Darlene, you got to consider that the buffalo half of his genetics is perfectly content to nuzzle down through the snow and eat what's underneath it. I mean, they're genetically hardwired for that.
Well, then that he may just be very comfortable there, like deer sleep in the snow, that kind of thing. And he's 1,000 pounds, so probably got plenty of fat on him.
Yeah, and we can repurpose a Monty Python line for them, from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. We can't risk another frontal assault. That beefalo's dynamite.
Yeah. So there you go. So that's the latest on Buddy. And the other thing about the vaccine, I got a lot of hell from my, oh my God, I got into so much trouble from my father yesterday. I was trying, my mother's in a nursing home and my dad is not, but he was supposed to go to the nursing home and both of them were supposed to get their vaccine, their Pfizer vaccination yesterday morning. No, I'm sorry. It was this morning they were supposed to get it. But yesterday, you know, I called both of them and said, look, you know, you really need to cross-check with the ingredients. You need to be sure that you understand the possible side effects. And I was trying to advocate for them. And I contacted some of the higher-ups in the nursing home. And basically my mother got cold feet. My father started yelling at me saying, you know, you screwed everything up and blah, blah, blah. And, I got reassurances, you know, that there's no penicillin, that it's not an antibiotic. That is this vaccine. And there's nothing related to penicillin because my mother is allergic to penicillin. So I wanted to be sure that she was clear for this. So I guess that she was nervous about it, but then I found out that I assume both of them got the vaccine this morning. Well, come to find out they didn't. My mother decided not to. So what I came to learn, though, even though I got the blame for it, what I came to learn was that one of the higher ups that I was talking to has a relative that's in the nursing home and recommended that the relative hold off, give it a few more weeks, because they had expedited this, the vaccines did not go through the normal course in terms of studies and time and everything else, because everything is in a desperation mode now, that she told her relative to hold off. My mother overheard that, got nervous, and decided to hold off. So my father was trying to call me today, and I was like holding off on the phone calls. But finally, I called him back, and it was really cute because he started singing Show Me the Way to Go Home from Jaws. That song, which I think was just his way of apologizing, but neither one of them got it. They're going to hold off till early January when they're going to offer the vaccination again at the facility. But I think both of them just wanted to give it a couple of more weeks just to see, you know, look at the news reports and just see what's going on. So,
well, I don't think you're missing it. You know, none of us here are anti-vaxxers. But
Not me either. I made that very clear to everybody that I spoke with.
But I don't think your misgivings are misplaced, Darlene, because the information coming out, you know, I had the story a few days ago about the people who have had severe allergic reactions. And they said they were people who were prone to allergic reactions. Well, that's a kind of a broad brush, don't you think?
Yes. Yes.
If you have a problem with allergies generally, then you might have a bad time with this. I mean, the upside is that no one has died. The downside, though, is that people have some people have these responses.
Right. And I've steered them away from the Moderna one. That one really worries me. And both of them, you know, it's the Pfizer BioNTech one that's being offered to both of them. But, you know, things are not necessarily clear because all of a sudden, you know, you learn, you hear things as you grow up in your family. I was always told it was penicillin that my mother was allergic to. But then my father told me last night it was the polio vaccine that she got in the early 60s that she, like, her entire body swelled up. She had a severe allergic reaction, and they were told it was the penicillin in the vaccine. So it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, if these vaccines have more than one ingredient,
yeah, well, that's very interesting, Darlene, because I personally, I've never had allergy problems through my life. I mean, I took Keflex one time and it kind of made me itch, so I just stay away from it. But generally, I mean, I wasn't even allergic to, I didn't have a reaction to poison ivy. But when I was little, my parents took me for my vaccines, and I think they gave me the, it was either the DPT. Yeah, it was the DPT. Diphtheria, pertussis, and tuberculosis, maybe. And from the waist down, I swelled up and turned blue.
Jeez. Whoa.
And, you know.
Well, I think if I could say something real quick. I think some of these allergies from vaccines are caused by they result from the egg being used in culturing certain vaccines. I'm trying to remember which vaccines are used. I think they used to do that with the flu shot.
Well, that you are correct, Billable, because that is one of the other things that they were saying. And I'll get off in a second. I saw Roger posted something, but real quick, that was one of the questions that was raised to me as I was talking to various people at the nursing home, nurses and upper management there. You know, they said, and my father as well. You know, they're asking those questions: Are you allergic to peanuts and eggs? that kind of thing. So that seems to be one of the standard allergens to consider in terms of taking this vaccine. And who knows, we might, it all might be great, but again, this did not go through the normal course in terms of the amount of studies. And there was something that Sanjay Gupta said, which really freaked me out about Moderna, that it sounds like the way they did the study was highly suspect. And Bob, you probably talked about this and I just missed it, but apparently the majority of people they gave the placebo to did not have COVID at all when they swabbed them. And it was like those that got the vaccine also did not have indications of COVID in their system when they swabbed them. So it's more or less as though the particular group.
So, Darlene,
that they
are you
were
saying it wasn't a good control group, Darlene?
There you go. Chris, you always put it, you always make it very succinct for me. Yes, that's exactly it. The control group wasn't good because the majority of people they swabbed did not, very few people had, were positive for the virus. So the people that showed, that did not get the placebo, that got the vaccine, didn't have any issues to begin with. So the control group was suspect. The way that they handled it, it's scary.
But the people who get the vaccine shouldn't have COVID.
Yeah, is that the point of the control group?
Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying they should not have COVID. Vaccines don't work if you already have something. It's not a cure.
Oh, and speaking, yeah, the vaccine is a prophylactic. And speaking,
you're right, but it was something else that
no, I remember reading about it. Yeah, I remember reading about it, and we may not have it exactly on point, but
I'm explaining it probably very poorly, and I apologize for that. But it was very concerning when I heard it was on CNN or MSNBC. I think it was MSNBC.
Well, let me before you head out, Darlene, just one second.
To clean the toilet.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it can. Hopefully it's not such a desperate situation that it can't wait for another couple of minutes.
No, it's not bad. Yeah.
Everybody send good vibes to our pal Megan. She just sent an email saying good vibes needed. I'm currently refugeeing to Delaware because two of my coworkers have tested positive for COVID. I'm staying at my mom's so my roommates don't get it. While here, I'll have to look for a second COVID test as the first one was rapid and came back negative. Good vibes needed. I'll keep you updated. We will all keep you in our thoughts and our fondest hopes, Megan. No doubt about it. But before you do head off on your errand of necessity, Darlene, I wanted to ask you, you got some of the Pullmans one year, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did. I think I was fortunate to get a couple of years in a row. The second year was more or less a booby prize because I thought I had won them, but I didn't. And you and Paul took pity on me and sent me some. And, oh, my God, they are so good.
Well, I was just going to see.
I didn't want to be greedy. Yeah.
I was just going to see if you wanted to jump in and offer a testimonial for them.
They're awesome. They are so awesome that I stretch out, like I'll allow myself one or two, maybe a handful a day, if that, and I'll munch as I go along. And I think last year I stretched them out well into January and was very happy that I did. They're
Pullman,
delightful.
Pullman
They're
rationing.
Delightful. How much is the tin generally, darling?
I'm sorry? Say that again, Bill.
How much is the tin? Is it like a 16-ounce container or?
It's generous.
It's a generous amount. I would say, yeah, I would say it's probably what Bob, probably about a 6x6 square tin.
Yeah.
A six to seven inch square tin, and it's filled to the brim. And Paul packs them very nicely in a nice inner plastic, foil. And it's a nice little Christmas tin that you can keep if you want and you reuse. And I would say there's several hundreds of those Paulmans in there. Would you agree with that, Bob?
Absolutely. I mean, Paul works. I mean, these are literally done almond by almond by almond. And Paul works his hands off. Yeah. I mean, he hand peels them, for God's sakes.
Yeah. And you will not find one. You will not find a single peel on any of them, like anything that's missed, nothing. And it's something that you will hoard for yourself because, you know, if you put them out for family,
they're gone.
They're gone. Yeah, they're gone.
You know, I got to, and there's never enough to experiment or anything. But I have often wondered if you could take those and, like, if you've got one of those peanut butter grinders or a nut grinder, I've wondered if you could make almond butter. And wouldn't that be amazing, Darlene?
Oh, that would be incredible. I would probably want to know, like, I'd probably want to get a recommendation from Paul, like, about what might be the most ideal oil to add to it if you need to kind of really make it.
Well, I mean, he's already using extra virgin olive oil, so.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe just drizzle a little in.
Liquid chocolate that hardens, that would be really good. Like soft chocolate, like dries.
Yeah, confectioner's chocolate.
Yeah.
Now we're going far afield. Sometimes purity is the best thing. And listen, I just got a note from Ralphs. Ralphs is a sweet and generous human being, and she said she wanted if somebody else wanted the Paulmans that she had put dibs on, that she would be willing to let somebody else jump in and get them. And what we'll do is, outside of the $70 that remain for Mark and Boulder's Drop a Boulder on 2020 challenge, outside of that, if you want that tin of Paulmans, the first email gets it, and all you got to do is kick in $50, and that'll get you that tin. There is only one. There will be two more next week.
Oh my God, that is so generous! And somebody better grab that.
And Ralph's just sweet.
Oh, that is wonderful, wonderful. Because that's generous. And grab it, because you will not regret that. It's wonderful.
So I will, again, the first email gets this tin of Paulmans, and then we got $70 to go to finish the challenge. But I did want to solicit your opinion, Darlene, because you are every bit as food porny as anyone. Yeah. I mean, you started.
Can I add something to that to the allergy issue? I'm someone that has to carry an EpiPen around for my nut allergy, and I heard that we're the people that really have to be careful, and that I don't think we can take the Pfizer vaccine. I don't know about the Moderna, but I think I'm not eligible to have the Pfizer vaccine.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, there's a bunch of different efforts going forward. There's another vaccine promisingly under development where the genetic material used for the vaccine is being grown on tobacco plants.
Ooh.
I don't know why. But, you know, they're trying everything.
That's really interesting.
So, but I got to thinking one other thing in terms of all this. You know, we're all about the vaccine, but wouldn't it make sense if, say, and I wondered if Joe Biden will do this, if he will be more vigorous in using the Defense Production Act? Because in addition to developing vaccine, which is apparently a rather involved process, we desperately need to ramp up supply on these monoclonal antibody therapies, because apparently they work like gangbusters. But the only people who seem to be able to get them are Rudy fucking Giuliani and COVID Caligula.
And Mr. Christie.
Oh, well, yes.
Biden said he was going to use the Defense Production Act for certain things. I'm sure he'll have a on the day one.
And Ben Carson.
Executive order.
Yeah, we need more PPE. I'm certain of that. I don't know about the ventilator situation. Maybe we're all right on that, but definitely PPE.
Well, I finally got an
Ford's got their whole plant building ventilators.
Yeah.
I finally got an N99 mask. So I feel a little better about that because it fits really, really snugly, and it's got multiple layers of filtration. So, you know, instead of just popping over your ear loops, there's ear loops, and then there's a pair of Velcro tabs that cross behind your neck and really holds it snug against your face.
It's maggot-proof, huh, Bob?
God, I hope.
Good luck.
I went for kerosene today, and I walked into the store that said, and there was a sign that says, no mask, no service. And there's a guy standing at the counter, no mask, getting plenty of service from the clerk behind the counter who's wearing no mask.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Well, I mean, if maggots have shown us one thing, it's that they can basically screw up a one-car parade, you know?
Oh, God almighty, yeah.
I mean, well, they hear shit, you know? You probably need, like, they probably need instructions.
No. I don't know. A one-car wedding.
There you go.
I'm into home delivery now. I'm staying away from the maggots.
That's a good
thing.
I
hope they all get haunted by the ghost of Herman Cain. Isn't he one of, like,
nine,
one of the ones
nine,
that came for Christmas?
Oh, jeez.
You will be visited by the ghost of Herman Cain.
He obviously did not get the model.
Well, I mean, there's an animated cartoon series out there now that has the ghost of Count Basie, so why the hell not?
Sure. What the hell?
Okay. How many of us have watched Big Mouth? Anybody? Bueller?
I have not.
No.
I was told that I should give it a try, and oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I'm no prude, but damn.
What is it?
It's a cartoon about the little kids in New Jersey going through puberty.
Oh.
And they it's on Netflix. And among other sidekicks are the ghost of Count Basie and a pair of hormone monsters. Maury and Connie. Connie the hormone monster is the companion to one of the lead female lead girl characters, and Maury is the companion to one of the boys. And Connie is delightful because she's voiced by Maya Rudolph. It's pretty funny, but it's also pretty gross. Yeah, talking pubic hairs and things like that.
Wow.
But yes, the ghost of Count Basie, so why can't we have the ghost of Herb Cain? Steve jumped in for a minute there, but we haven't heard much from him. Steve, what's going on, man?
Who, me?
Bob, what's shaking, bro? Or which one? What are you talking to?
You.
Oh, me. Okay, cool. Oh, man, I'm just trying to process everything, brother. How about you?
You know, between that and the going after kerosene, I've got about all I can handle.
Got some pretty heavy news today, man. The assisted living center, you know my mom's got dementia.
Yeah.
She tested positive for the Rona.
No. Oh, no. I'm sorry, Steve. Oh, Jesus, Steve, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Steve.
Well, I mean, it was bound to happen. If you lived here, you would understand why. She's down there near that NASCAR. Duncan knows what I'm talking about. That big NASCAR. It's like a exhibition where Bill Elliott is, and those people are dumber than a bag of hammers. Nobody wears masks.
Oh, what is that, Dawsonville?
Dawsonville, yeah.
Dawsonville from Dawsonville.
Yeah, there's a big NASCAR, I don't know, what is it, Duncan, a showcase or something? Or
museum?
Museum.
It's the Georgia NASCAR Museum.
Right, well, she's close to that. And, you know, that speaks in volumes of it in itself. And I'm sure that just, you know, due to the environment, it was bound to happen.
Well, is she having symptoms?
They said that she just had some sniffles. Of course, she has dementia, so she doesn't know what the hell's going on. But what's got me concerned is her oxygen levels at 88. So that's not good, you know. But a 90-year-old woman, maybe not. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But
God, our hearts just go out to her, though.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around all this, man.
It ain't easy.
Yeah. But other than that, everything's going great.
Yeah, apart from
When he comes down to Georgia, Steve?
Say what, Rick?
Is Joey going to visit you?
I doubt it. He called, and I frankly told him I don't want any visitors. He called me a couple weeks ago, and I wasn't being mean. You know, if my family showed up on my front stoop, I wouldn't answer the door. I don't want any visitors right now.
Oh, I hear you. I think
it's too contagious, man.
Yeah, it is.
He understood, you know.
You can't mix households. That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, so many things are so screwed up by this, but you know, you just have to be an adult about it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's driving me batshit. I have a brand new grandson, and
be pragmatic.
And my plan had been, at some point, to jump in the car and road trip out to New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard, you know, I talked to my daughter, and I heard from our buddy Dr. John, who said it is just apocalyptic there right now, and our pal Laborman has said something similar. So,
I'm surprised at the cases in my county. Last month we had 834 cases for the whole month of November. Through December 12th, we've already had 655 cases.
These are new cases, Sparky, right?
Yeah, new, brand new cases in 12 days.
Jeez.
Wow, Sparky.
I mean, what's the population of your county?
The population? The whole county is about 63,000.
Wow. Those are big numbers for a small county. Jeez, that's like, 600 cases is 1% of the county already. Just in 1 week.
655 cases in 12 days.
Yeah, well, in 12 days. That's like 1% of the county in 12 days has gotten the Rona. It's amazing.
Well, you reap what you sow. You don't wear masks is the kind of shit that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I went to get it.
Yeah, and that makes all the more evil what that asshole at DHHS?
Mr. Herd Mentality, that guy?
Yep. Yeah, Mr. Herd Mentality. Herd Mentality. God damn you, billable. They throw around, you know, 1%, 2%. We're talking about 6.6 million dead Americans that he wanted.
Yeah.
The purge.
Because you can't just let it run wild and think that you're going to protect vulnerable populations, especially when no one's willing to take the necessary precautions.
Exactly.
I mean, these fuckers would have been right at home sharing office space with Dr. Mengele.
Yeah. It's the same mentality.
And Dr. Jack as well in the next door over.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hey, Steve.
That's why I sent that thing in the other night about crimes against humanity.
Right.
And I want people to understand that's not just me saying, oh, this sucks. I actually have studied that, and I've been emailing that to everybody I can possibly email it to who has any kind of platform. And I emailed it to somebody who actually emailed it to a TV journalist. I don't remember where it is. I am determined to get that out because I want people to understand that.
When we get this all over with, I want to see people frog marched.
He needs to be, I'm going to tell everyone a really esoteric, weirdo wrinkle in federal law. even if Trump gets an even if he gets a pardon, he can still be brought up on charges in federal court of crimes against humanity. Because that's not a federal crime. It is a crime in international humanitarian law, and there is a concept in international law which the U.S. called universal jurisdiction, which means that there are certain crimes that are so heinous that any court can try any person for committing them, which is how Israel was able to try Eichmann in an Israeli court for crimes committed in Germany because they were so heinous.
Steve, they kidnapped Eichmann.
Steve.
Sorry?
I just was asking, that's the bar. It has to be such a heinous crime.
Crimes against humanity. Oh, no. I'm saying there are a category of crimes, and crimes against humanity, war crimes, genocide, something called the crime against peace, also called the crime of aggression. Those are called the four international core crimes. Any country can exercise what's called universal jurisdiction, and that is a concept that dates back to the early 1800s in U.S. jurisprudence for courts exercising jurisdiction over people in this country from around the world for those crimes.
Now, well, Steve, let me ask a question. Isn't the ability to try people in the U.S. for war crimes, or let's say a president for crimes against humanity, not war crimes, but crimes against humanity, I guess, of which war crimes would be a category?
No, no. War crimes and crimes against humanity are two distinct things.
Yeah, no, I know.
They are not subsets of one another.
Okay. Well, the International Criminal Court, isn't that the court
has jurisdiction? They don't have any. Okay, I'm going to explain something, and this is going to sound really super esoteric to people. Number one, the only way that the ICC, which is the International Criminal Court, has jurisdiction over anybody is if that country, that a citizen of that country is a signatory to the treaty.
Right.
It's called the Rome Treaty.
Right.
We're not a signatory to it. Therefore, they do not have jurisdiction. However, the Rome Statute, which codifies what these various crimes are, that is instructive on what crimes against humanity are, and something I emailed the other night in international humanitarian law, number one. Number two, even if you are a signatory to the Rome Treaty, the International Criminal Court is something called what it amounts to is secondary jurisdiction. It only has jurisdiction if a country does not prosecute someone within its borders for the crimes itself.
Right,
okay, put that off the table. The ICC will not have jurisdiction over Donald Trump. It won't.
Right.
However, any U.S. court would have jurisdiction to try him for crimes against humanity on the basis of something called universal jurisdiction.
So, hey, Steve, can we charge Dark Cheney with all his war crimes?
I mean, conceivably, yeah.
We should.
Do you remember back in the Reign of Error, who was the guy who prosecuted Charlie Manson? Vincent Bugliosi. He wrote a book called The Prosecution of George Bush.
Yeah, I saw the movie. Yeah,
and actually there was a move to send the book to every prosecutor in the United States in hopes of finding one with enough guts to bring the charges on that same theory that Steve's talking about, that jurisdiction can be conferred anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, in particular with that, Bob, it's because it's a little bit different because Bugliosi did that under U.S. law. And frankly, Cheney could be charged under U.S. law because actually war crimes are and crimes against humanity are codified in U.S. law. So since Cheney never got a pardon, he could be subject to the jurisdiction of any court under U.S. law for war crimes and crimes against humanity because those are codified in the U.S. criminal code and the way they're referred to as grave breaches of the grave breaches of the – what are the treaties called? I'm drawing a blank.
Accords?
No.
Convention?
Bretton Woods?
No. Bretton Woods has nothing to do with criminal anything.
Okay.
Grave breaches of the what are the all the treaty the international treaties are called Geneva Conventions.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
there
yeah.
You go.
Geneva okay. Convention. Grave breaches of the Geneva Conventions. The mm-hmm. only rub with Cheney insofar as it concerns the Geneva Convention is the Geneva Convention only applies, generally speaking, to prisoners of war,
right, and wartime conditions.
Okay. Which and not one person, no people captured on the battlefield in the war in Afghanistan or the war in Iraq were prisoners of war because they were not. They did not. They weren't military of a nation state who wore the insignia of a soldier of that nation state. And yet, I don't want to get
those rules didn't apply because they were enemy combatants, Steve.
No, forget that. Don't. That's a like Bob has said repeatedly. That's a term that Cheney and Bush made up. Yeah. Forget about what they were. Only think about what they weren't. What they weren't are combatants of a state actor.
Yeah. Somebody wearing a uniform.
Right. That's
another nation.
They are what
other terminology would refer to as irregulars.
Right.
Oh.
But that the Geneva Conventions apply to. And realize the reason is because the Geneva Conventions were written at a time when the notion of terrorism really wasn't a concept that had been the least bit developed in international humanitarian law or international law generally.
Well, separately, I just had a note from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Yeah. Please explain what Nikki Haley did by bowing out of UN rules before the separation of families crimes at the Mexican border.
What
was she doing when she bowed out or pulled the U.S. out of UN rules before the separation of families at the border? She was trying to avoid that jurisdiction, I think, is the upshot.
This is the UN treaty as to the rights of children, women, or what is
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
exactly?
I think so. I'm wondering if that is kidnapping children away from their parents at the border is that a crime against humanity? Because it sure smells like one.
I honestly, Bob, that definition that I sent you the other night, that was subsection K. What the other subsections were, I don't know. However, generally speaking, the concept in international law I'm not trying to engage in some sort of intellectual masturbation here. I'm trying to get people to understand the origin of these things.
Yeah, yeah, sure. No, I would not accuse you of that.
It's very complicated, so it helps tell the background. Absolutely, Steve.
Okay, so you go back to what's called the IMT, the International Military Tribunal, which were the Nuremberg trials. Mm-hmm. And part of the defense of the defendants in the Nuremberg trials is, wait a second, these were not laws that were codified or even in concept in international law at the time we committed them. So how can you prosecute me under a law that didn't exist at the time that we committed the crimes?
Right. I had no notice of that I was violating the law, any law.
But the way that the Nuremberg prosecutors and judges got around that was to say there are certain crimes, there are certain acts in international law that are so heinous that you don't need a law to be on notice that it's wrong. You know, mass killing of people because of their race, religion, whatever. You know, come on, it's like. You honestly needed a law to know that that was wrong. All the IMT, again, that was the International Military Tribunal, did was we codified. We just wrote down what everyone – nobody would have thought, gee, is it wrong to kidnap children and men and women and take them out of their homes and take their property and put them in camps and gas them? Is that wrong? Is there a debate? There's not a debate there. And arguably, whether or not what the U.S. did with those children, whether or not it's a crime against humanity, it very well could be. But the fact of the matter is this, is that that's one of those things. It's such a heinous crime that no person would ever think that it's there's any gray area as to whether or not kidnapping a child. And let's remember what the motivation here was. The motivation here was we are going to take these children from their parents to deter other people from coming here seeking what they had a right to seek, which was asylum. And not only that, but if you know, the way asylum law works in the United States is you cannot ask for asylum outside of the United States.
Right.
Generally speaking.
You have to be at an entry point, a border entry point generally.
You have to be in the United States.
Right.
Which is why when you get people, what they would do is they would come to a border entry and say, I am looking for asylum. At which point, you know, we have to give them their quote unquote day in court to plead their case.
Yeah.
There was no requirement for them to show up at a border crossing. As long as they had foot in the United States, you could ask for asylum.
In the United States. There are caveats to that when you have what's called a safe third country. Which was that bullshit where they tried to do, I think it was El Salvador to say that was a safe third, which is bullshit.
And Guatemala.
Yeah, they tried to take all three of those countries, and I think they tried to make a choke point at Honduras.
Honduras.
Yeah.
And going to an embassy is not that. That's not part of that U.S. territory in which they can ask for asylum.
Hmm.
Again, I'm sorry if I'm getting really weird and esoteric.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I mean,
Steve, you set the stage for the perfect question. Is this indifference to life that the entire Trump administration had, this complete indifference to life?
Oh, wait a minute. No, Chris. This was not indifference. What we learned the other night and which prompted my email was this is what made it a crime against humanity. Negligence and doing things and not knowing is one thing. That's probably not a crime against humanity. What made it crimes against humanity was it was a policy.
Mm-hmm.
This was not negligence. This was intentional. This was a policy of the United States.
So if Trump travels to Scotland to his golf...
I was just going to say that. If he travels anywhere around the world, a country...
Yeah.
Could legitimately take him into custody. And if their courts recognize universal jurisdiction, not all of them do, I suspect most if not all the EU courts probably do in each state.
Yeah. Scotland does, I know.
Yeah, they could prosecute him.
They will, actually, akin to Pinochet. Remember Pinochet?
Exactly. Where Spain exercised universal jurisdiction over Pinochet.
The thing is, UK is getting out of the EU right now. I don't pretend to know their law, but But that's all out there. He may go some, you know, unless he just goes to Russia and certain.
Yeah, but remember, Lou, Scotland has its own courts and its own system of laws. I mean, for instance, and this, and you may have heard this somewhere along the way, but in trying to explain to people the difference between guilt and innocence and not guilty, you know, in any American court, and it's one of those things that drives me crazy from a journalistic standpoint, when some reporter will say that so-and-so was found innocent of the charges, it'd send me right up the wall. And I used to send emails about it. Quit that. Because there's only, to my knowledge, there's only one jurisdiction in the world where you can be found innocent, outright innocent, where that's a choice for a jury. And in Scotland, you can be found guilty, not guilty, and innocent.
Because
not guilty is by far and away not the same as innocent.
Guilty just means that the state did not meet its burden. Innocent means it's an affirmative statement that not only did the state not meet its burden, you didn't do it. And we're making a finding that you didn't do it.
Yeah, Scotland's got an interesting judiciary. They're the country that tried, I think, the Lockerbie bomber, like years after the fact. That was, I think, that Gaddafi had. It was a Libyan national, and I think some sort of a might have been universal jurisdiction to try him in Scotland, if I recall.
Well, the crime was committed in Scotland. Why would they? They don't need they don't need your universal jurisdiction.
At least, yeah, I guess they don't. That's true. Yeah. It was a crime committed in that state, yeah. So they could prosecute him there.
They could exercise jurisdiction via their, what the hell is it called? There's a term in international law, via their what's called municipal law. And municipal law in international jurisprudence doesn't mean city, it means state actor. Wow,
hey, you guys,
we're really getting off into the weeds here.
We were talking about Augusto Pinochet. Well, he actually died today in 2006.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
And in breaking news, Augusto Pinochet is still dead, along with Generalissimo Francisco Franco. Yes. Oh, hey, y'all.
And they have some reverse pineapple going on.
Hopefully.
For sure, down in
a forest of them. There's only about 45 minutes or so left in the program. And we are still $70 away from qualifying for Mark from Boulder's Drop a Boulder on 2020 challenge. And the now extra 10 of Paulmans is on the table for anybody who wants to kick in $50. If you were listening to Darlene earlier, you know how good they are. And so courtesy of Paul from Parts Unknown, anybody who wants to contribute $50 toward keeping the horn on the air will get a tin of Paulmans. The first person to ask is the person who gets.
Remember, the Schaller and Weber challenge is still on the table, too.
Yes. There was a 15 and a 20, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And like you said, Bob, I'm sorry, but there's going to be a delay because, you know, I actually already ordered and they've processed the order and they've printed the shipping label at the Esther Price in Dayton. That was on Monday and they still haven't shipped it. So these companies, and which makes sense because nobody's shopping. Everyone's doing stuff online. And I don't think a lot of these companies, particularly the smaller ones, you know, the Schaller and Weber's and the Esther Price's of the world, they just don't have the capacity. So shit is just sitting there.
And God, I love that. I love that Bavarian sweet hot mustard.
Ugh.
So good. And the Weissburst that's in that one package.
Mm-hmm.
That's just heavenly.
Bob, I got to tell you, if you ever come to New York, I'm going to take you up there because to walk into that place and see their the case there of all the sausages that they make in that place. They make them there.
Yeah, see, that's like Binkert's in Balmer. to whom we I have a long-standing connection. My God, it's just amazing. Jaegerwurst, the spicy Hungarian rings, the Weisswurst, the ordinary hot dogs are fabulous. Oh my God, they're so good.
Something that's made there.
Yeah,
there is a difference in taste.
Oh heavens, Steve, yes.
Can you next time you go in there, can you bring like a bottle and bottle up the smell, the scent of that place and send that to me, please?
Yeah, just hold a jar open and then close the jar and send it to Chris. Right.
And one of the neatest parts is the guy who's like the manager actually is German and you can hear the accent. It's good. Yeah. I mean, it's really good shit.
Oh, and by the way, the Palmans have been claimed. They will be winging toward Jeremy in Vermont. And Jeremy, I need you to just separately email me your mailing address, please, so I can provide it to Paul from Parts Unknown. So Randy and Jeremy will be getting the first round of Palmans, and then next week there will be two more on offer, and we'll probably do that. Christmas Eve is Thursday, so we'll do a front porch on Christmas Eve, and we'll put them out there for the offer on Christmas Eve, and that'll be kind of fun.
Yeah, I want to also provide some interesting news. Yes, most know that I'm a data nerd on here. I've been graphing the cases per million persons that in the U.S. versus the rest of the world, and our ratio of cases per million is almost 52,000, whereas the world is only 9,700. So
USA, USA, USA. We're number one. We're number one. Sorry.
But Steve, that shows how free we are. That just
yes, exactly.
Shows how free we are.
Oh, we're so free. Bob, I feel so free. And if, you know what? If I ever get it and I get and I'm intubated, I will be so free.
Can't get freer than that.
Oh, freer than that.
You're just free to lay there on your belly, horizontally crucified, can't move, can't speak, can't see, but you can hear everything going on around you.
And isn't that what freedom is all about?
What freedom? What freedom?
But I don't have to work. I don't have to go anywhere.
I mean, doesn't this kind of hint that we may be better at testing, terrible at tracing, but this kind of goes to Donald Trump's point that
no.
Okay. Well, I don't know, but
We're not good at testing. We're about 20th in the world at testing.
Okay. Well,
I keep track of all
and remember that rapid test is nothing but a coin toss. It may be right or it may be wrong. And so that's why Megan right now is sitting in Delaware scared out of her mind.
Yeah, no, I remember making that point. It's 50-50 way back when. It literally was 50% of the time. You know, what's the point? Getting back to one of Steve's points earlier in the week, and perhaps you felt you addressed it, Bob, but I kind of think what he was saying was, in my mind, Biden should just worry about his base and not try to reach out to the other side because the Republicans don't. And it's the way to get things done. And just keep your base energized and not worry about getting a couple of Republicans here and there to agree with you.
Power.
So that's a point that I believe Steve raised earlier in the week. And I kind of agree with that, candidly. I really wish he'd really ram down at least a federal medical program that we could all join, even if we have to pay for it. No matter what, no matter how much the Republicans cry and scream it's the end of the world and all that stuff, just ignore them. They're going to scream no matter what. It doesn't matter.
And the two word responses to them, it should be,
go ahead,
we won.
Yeah, exactly,
we won.
You lost.
You lost.
You lost.
Tired of trying to build bridges to a you know, to people like Mitch McConnell. He just refuses to cooperate, and we just have to realize that. And you got to just steamroll over him.
Oh, and by the way, this story about Mitch McConnell's election maybe having been dodgy is beginning to get some legs.
Good.
A DC Report, which is a subsection of Raw Story, fleshed it out in great detail today. It's over on the page if you want to find it. Note coming in from Mark, the author of the challenge this evening. And remember, there's $70 to go on that, so let's please not leave that challenge on the table so we can finish the week fully funded. Guilty innocent. Mark says, I agree about using terms accurately in news. From what I remember from J school, the reason that it was taught as guilty and innocent is because the accidental omission of the not in not guilty, either in print or TV radio news, subjects the publisher, radio TV owner, subject to defamation. I do agree there's no such thing in U.S. law as a verdict of innocent, and really don't like the use of the word innocent when reporting. That makes perfect sense. It's the folks in legal who are, yeah, they're the ones why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, the people who say, yeah. And I have, on along those lines, I can't tell you, I get so angry when people say things like Roe versus Wade, which legalized abortion.
No. It didn't. No.
Or when Obergefell, which legalized same-sex marriage.
I mean, that's just a cheap sort of shorthand way of trying to say it, but that may be the ultimate import, but it was not what the suits actually did. They acknowledged constitutional rights.
Bingo. That's what it is. But you know what, Bob? I think if journalists weren't lazy, first of all, if you're a journalist and you say things like that, you don't just say it unless you've done your research to find out, oh, I guess I should say it that way. Don't say shit you don't know.
Steve, there's a style manual, brother.
Okay.
And
I'm sorry, man.
That's okay. I'm not calling you out. I mean,
but
if folks did that,
there would be no Newsmax or OAN then.
Oh, damn! There'd be no Newsmax.
Speaking of which, I just
shed a tear. Not.
speaking of which, Chris, the researchers behind a particular study about mask wearing, and this is from CNN Business, have taken issue with Frau Laura Ingraham. Researchers reject Fox News host Laura Ingraham's misuse of their studies to support mask denialism. She tweeted, "Told you," over a Danish study that didn't find a statistically significant difference in protection against contracting COVID-19 for those who wear masks. And they add parenthetically at CNN, health experts have repeatedly stated the primary reason for masks is to protect the public from the wearer, not the wearer from the public. Mm-hmm. But she was so happy. And jumped for joy because she spent almost an entire year now mocking the entire public health structure in this country. And what she was citing, the authors of both that, the Danish study and the study in Hong Kong, well, the authors told CNN Business that, University of Hong Kong professor Benjamin Cowling said, I'm disappointed because there are good reasons for people to wear masks. And was one of the authors of the study and added, I'm not convinced about mandates, but I am disappointed that there has been this encouragement not to wear masks when it's a simple measure that can help. And at Copenhagen University Hospital, Professor Henning Bundgaard said, there is a twilight zone between research and politics. People are using the science in different ways because they have different motives. But make no mistake, just as those studies always show on an almost annual basis that people who watch Fox News are the least informed in the country. I think I saw one recently said that if you watch Fox News, you are more likely to contract the coronavirus.
That wouldn't surprise me.
And in particular, if you watch around the time that Sean Hannity's show is on.
Well, the Hannity job or Frau Ingram.
Or Fucker Tarlson.
Yeah, Tucky Cucky. Cucky Tucky.
And I don't... This is Darlene. I don't mean to be mean, but would that be a time to like have that laugh? That guy's ha ha ha. Can I just say my toilet is still waiting, but I it was really bugging me about that whole thing that I mentioned about Sanjay Gupta that Steve from New York called me out on, and I just posted a pic of it. I found it finally. It was a conversation between Anderson Cooper and Sanjay Gupta, and it was on CNN comparing the Moderna and Pfizer coronavirus vaccines. It's rather complex. It's complicated to explain, but what it sounds like is what he's saying, and again, this is evolving, but he said that the whole point is not only to prevent illness, but to prevent infection. So what Moderna did was they did swab people leading up to the first shot and in between the first and second shot. And they found, you know, of course, they swabbed people that never had any symptoms of the virus, but they also swabbed people that showed positive for the virus, but were asymptomatic. And what he's saying is that a larger number of individuals that were positive but asymptomatic wound up being in the placebo group, and that the vaccinated group had far less indications, or they were far less likely to show the virus, you know, and the symptoms, obviously, because they didn't have the virus. So that what I posted there shows the vaccine group versus the placebo group in the chat. So there, he was saying that was kind of a note of caution, and it's still evolving, that those that were in the control group or that got the vaccine were far less likely to be positive and asymptomatic. So that could be an indicator of an issue there. And, you see what I'm saying? It's complex. It's complex. But that more people who were positive and asymptomatic were likely to be in the placebo group.
Well, and if we think of this as the Titanic, Darlene, that kind of dovetails nicely or badly, depending on how you look at it, into something that is becoming more and more apparent, and that is that somehow or another, miraculously, the wealthy people are getting into the lifeboats and the folks in steerage can go get stuffed. And I got two stories right here, one from ProPublica, and, you know, they do fantastic work. And they're reporting on the first 5,000 vaccines that were delivered to Stanford, Stanford Medical Center. And they claim to be using an algorithm to determine who gets a shot. And it reminds me, in a way, because there's always a reference to something, it reminds me of that commandment from Dune, from the Orange Catholic Bible, that says, thou shalt not make a machine in the image of a human mind. Well, Stanford claimed that they were using an algorithm to determine which medical personnel should be vaccinated. Well, it turns out the algorithm made sure that only 7 out of the first 5,000 vaccines went to the medical residents who are on the front lines treating patients. Now, if you were a high-ranking doctor, well up on the food chain and attending patients by freaking Zoom, they were there to stick a needle in your arm, but only 7 of the people who are like third-year residents. And, you know, residents get treated, interns get treated like shit. First-year residents like shit. Second-year residents a little less shitty. And third-year residents a little less shitty still, but still like shit. The one third-year resident said, you know, I'm delivering babies from women who have COVID,
and I can't get the vaccine? And somehow, you know, who designed that algorithm? And why can't you just go through and say, okay, you're dealing with patients. Go to the front of the line. You don't need an algorithm to tell you that. And then in Alabama, Robert Bentley, remember Robert Bentley? Used to be governor of the state of Alabama until he had to resign because, well, he violated campaign finance laws and him, a deacon at the First Baptist Church of Tuscaloosa, was caught in flagrante delicto with a woman who was not his upstanding, God-fearing, Christian family values marriage wife down to Gulf Shores, the Redneck Riviera, and had to resign and is barred for life from ever holding political office in the state of Alabama ever again. That fucker got a vaccine at the same time that Alabama's total vaccine allocation got cut by 40%.
Oh, geez.
So there's, you know, and then.
So, Bob, I think a big part of that algorithm is probably the number of zeros you have in your bank account.
I think that's exactly what it is, Chris.
Exactly. Cowbell for that, Chris. Good deduction.
Absolutely. Thank you for the reminder, Billable. I saw that our buddy John in Central PA is with us this evening. You there, John?
Yep. How's it going?
Good. You're a little overmodded, but you're good.
It's probably because I have my wireless earbuds in. That's probably why. Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking about looking on Twitter about all these goddamn psychos, man. Like, about like what Jim Jordan said today, I guess, and Ron Johnson. I mean, that guy's going to get his freaking clock cleaned, I hope, in 2 years. Ron Johnson, that stupid ass son of a bitch.
That's one of those mysteries of the universe. How in the name of all did he manage to beat Russ Feingold?
Oh, really? Oh, was that 2016?
No. That was, 22, 16. That was 10, 2010, I think.
Oh, yeah?
That was the first wave of teabaggery.
Oh, okay. So he's been in there for 10 years already. I didn't know that. Well,
at least he's got competition for stupidest man in the Senate because Tommy Tuberville's there now.
Yeah, that guy is really stupid.
He was receiving a heap of praise from COVID Caligula earlier because he said he might just stand up and object when they meet on January 6th.
Of course he will, because he doesn't have an allegiance to the United States. He has an allegiance to an orange wannabe dictator. And these people are starting to piss me off. I'm tired of it.
I can't help wondering, though, John, if Mitch McConnell won't step into the midst of this, because as gross as he is, he's been showing some signs that he's a little done.
Bob, he's desperate.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's
because
hard to
of Georgia.
Yeah. And he's got a damn fine reason for being nervous. Yeah.
I mean, apparently, and I don't want to interrupt from John. I'll just say this real quick, and then I'll shut up. Apparently, they're really scared about what's going on down there with the fact that people are – what's going on with no stimulus or help or anything, which is apparently why Mitch is like, get something passed.
Yeah. But if that's the case,
why does he still have his heels dug in the sand? Because there was actually a story, and far be it from me to give credit to the MAGA administration, but I saw a story yesterday that White House aides hadn't had to talk Nitwit Nero out of throwing a temper tantrum and demanding $2,000 per family. It would have been the first time in 4 years, but I would have said, I support that. But they did successfully talk him out of it, which is a hell of a thing.
Darlene has her hand raised.
Yeah, go, Darlene.
Or she forgot to lower it.
You want to jump in, Darlene?
I'll lower her hand for her.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks. I forgot to lower it. My apologies.
I thought you were busy. Darlene.
I thought there might have been breaking buddy news or something.
That's good. I was on my way to clean the toilet. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I agree with everything that's being said, though, about Mitch McConnell and, you know, what's going on in terms of the elites getting the vaccine before the rest of us hoi polloi. I'm fine with the elderly in our country getting it. I think at least we're showing that we do care about our elders for once. But I feel like douchebags like Michael Pence, he doesn't deserve to get it. You know, he flouted all of the PPE and precautions. Anyone that flouted it, I don't think they should get the vaccine.
Good point.
You know, in terms of amongst our so-called betters in the political firmament, you know, the Supreme Court, the Supremes, they all lined up for it.
You know, I think any.
I heard they did. Oh. So maybe I misunderstood that. But
they're in line, the ones, I think.
Well, they don't fucking deserve the ones that passed down that horrible decision concerning Cuomo in New York and the religious you know, exemption and everything. I feel like they shouldn't get it. They shouldn't be. They can get it eventually, but they should not be in line ahead of the rest of us. That's just my take on it. So I'm gonna. Oh, thanks for lowering my hand. I'll listen, but I'll mute. Thanks.
Just give him some bleach.
Yeah, perfect, Steve. Absolutely. Yeah. Bleach.
Just give him some bleach and put an ultraviolet light right up their asses.
my old Iron Maiden black light. I'll send it to Clarence. Yeah.
Bombard them with ultraviolet light C rays, which will burn their skin.
It's been a long time, so I apologize if I don't remember this correctly. If in the Falklands War, the British officers ate after their troops, you know, the troops got slightly better care, whereas the Argentinian officers always ate before their troops, and it was kind of a metaphor for good leadership. And I've always just, I mean, I would think our leaders should be toward the end of the line, but unfortunately it's as someone else said, I think Chris or someone, that it's, you know, the zeros after their, in their bank account is what really matters, which is really a sad statement on the state.
$25,000 could get you a ticket to the front of the line.
Is that right?
There are rich people who were asking that question. You know, if I donate $25,000 somewhere, can I get it now? Oh. And that's, you know, that's why a country really doesn't need a billionaire class.
Exactly, Bob. Billionaires should be abolished.
I don't know, Bob. Who's going to buy the elections then?
Well, I know. I mean,
who's going to buy all that ad space from the big pharma and all that? Who's going to buy all the politicians? So, hey, Bob, do you have any details on that? Oh, you said that there was a link about the Moscow Mitch
election fraud. Yeah, it's at Raw Story right now.
Okay. I was wondering, do you know if anybody's digging into sniffing around Precious Lindsay besides the pool boy?
Oh, wait, that's another one. And besides the pool boy. It's good.
more accurately, Precious Lindsay's election. Quote,
I thought you hired friend.
What?
That was my understanding. He actually paid friends, which is even worse. But go ahead. Sorry, Chris.
No.
Who's screen saving, sir? Sharing. That, he's got steps and trees posted.
Boy, Dad, I don't see that, Spark.
I see it. I pressed the wrong button.
Oh, it's Jack.
Yeah. I pressed, like, together mode. I was trying to see if I could see all the icons of the people, you know, and I put grid view, but it won't show me, you know, and I put speaker view, and it just has Bob, and nobody else comes up. And then
you're on a Mac, right?
Yeah, maybe I tried large grid or something, but it just, like, I can't see all the names and stuff.
Well, just so you'll know, I have emailed the two addresses to Paul from Parts Unknown. So watch your mailboxes, Jeremy and Randy. And I'm happy to say that we're down to only $60 to go to meet the Drop a Boulder on 2020 challenge, courtesy of Mark in Boulder. We've only got 19 minutes to finish those $60. So please, 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 let's not leave that laying on the table. And let's finish this week before Christmas week fully funded, so that we're not, you know, digging out of a hole come Monday. I'm sorry to beat on this, but it's how this program stays alive. By the way, Lee in New York reminds us, an algorithm is simply a set of rules put into computer instructions. It does as designed. It will do exactly as instructed. If it is women and children first, or by descending financial worth, it is done as told. And Lee reminds us, by the way, asking, can he sign the bill with the funding bill with a golf pencil? Oh, yeah, that or a crayon. The Congress,
or Sharpie.
Yeah, and he can put two little dots inside each of the little points, so it looks like a Klan meeting.
Hey, with all the rounds he's been playing, he's got plenty of golf pencils sitting around to sign the bill with, you know.
Well, if he hasn't gnawed them like the toddler that he is.
So he's going to avoid the government shutdown.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Our Congress is so godforsaken dysfunctional that the best they could manage to do was to fund the government for two more days so that it won't shut down over the weekend.
God. That is so damn lame.
It's pathetic.
You say dysfunctional?
Bunch of morons.
Hey, Bob, real quick.
Ain't to fight a government good?
Say? Sorry, I was going to ask something. I just wanted to ask Bob if he missed that snowstorm. It turned out to be a hell of a mess. But yeah, anyway.
Well, it did. It was a mess for a lot of people. Boston got hammered.
Yep.
Rhode Island got hammered. We got rain. That's all.
You're lucky.
Yo, we dodged it big time.
Well, it's funny because, like, back in the summer, and I'll be real quick and then I'll butt out. But, like, back in the summer, I traded in my nice Toyota Tundra pickup truck, you know, that was, I thought was great in the snow. But I got it for, I traded for a Honda CR-V, which is, you know, better on gas and all that, you know. And I was very, very, I'm in utter disbelief of how great those things are in the snow. And I think it's better than the truck in the snow because of the way that four-wheel drives, you know, lock up when you go to turn or something.
Yeah.
You know, if you ever get that jerking, I don't know what's going on with that, but every one of them do it. And you don't get that with this all-wheel drive. But anyway, I just wanted to throw it, see if, you know, make sure that, you know, you didn't get hit by that. I heard you say that. And I was like, man, I wish that was us.
But, oh, I was expecting the power to go out, everything. But somehow or another, we managed to miss it all. It just rained and rained and rained. And everywhere you step, it squishes and. But it didn't freeze up. But next week it is going to get vile. On the romantic side of things, we got a 70 right now. The extended forecast, we got a 70% chance of snow on Christmas Eve, and a 40% chance on Christmas Day. But the low temperature Christmas Eve is 19. The low temperature Christmas night is 16. So I think it's a pretty safe bet. I will not be back here broadcasting on Christmas night.
Oh, man.
Radio, Bob, for Christmas?
You don't want to see what happens to me to naked radio in those temperatures. You just really don't.
Brings new meaning to the term Nutcracker Suite, I guess.
Man,
Bob, I thought you had a natural warm spring outside your house.
We did until they blasted for coal out of ways and dried it up.
Ah, damn.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens. But it's gonna get hateful cold when it gets down below 20. It's like this house doesn't have walls. Ugh.
You know, can I go back to Steve? I think Steve said he had to go or something, but I wanted to. He brought up all the really good points and everything. Do you think there's any chance? And I don't know if there's any indication in his past, but if Biden can get us into the ICC,
is that a possibility? Well, but that requires treaty action, and it would never get past the Senate.
That's a huge
Steve
bar.
From New York has left.
That's a huge bar. Okay, forget
it. If I'm not mistaken, Bob, don't treaties require a two-thirds majority in the Senate to pass?
I think you're right. And by the way, Al, that's going to leave a mark. Jeremy in Vermont just wrote, really? Want me to call the wambulance? It's 9 here right now, and it hasn't been above 19 in 3 days. Oops. Ouch.
That sucks.
Well, that's what you get when you live in Vermont.
Yeah, so there.
It got down into the 40s today here in Portland. Sorry.
I could see my breath this morning when I went outside.
Ooh.
Well, breaking news just came across. The FDA has officially authorized the Moderna vaccine.
I thought they did that this morning.
No, that was just now. Or just recently. Yesterday, the advisory panel gave it the go-ahead.
Oh, okay. That's what... Well,
yeah. I'm saying they'll just get it delivered.
Well, apparently the logistics aren't going to be quite so bad on that because it doesn't... It's a little bit easier to store and handle than the Pfizer.
And it's coming out of Mississippi.
Really?
Saw it on the... And there's a McKesson plant down there that's handling it, processing or whatever. I forget the name of the town. There was a live report on MSNBC, a guy standing in front of the building with they had FedEx trucks and stuff all parked ready to go there or something. Or just the trailers, anyway.
Oh, and now we've entered the competing misery temperature index part of the program. Steve in New York just wrote in 9 Jeremy, fuck you all, it's about 0 Fahrenheit in Ottawa. Well, but that's Canoodlia. It's 0 for all year round in Canoodlia.
Do they even have heat, centralized heat at the parliament in Ottawa? I don't know.
No, they burn snow.
Somebody's burning leaves here, smoking up the whole neighborhood.
To burn snow, don't you first have to mow it, Bob? You have to mow the snow first to burn it.
You mow the snow. You mow the snow, then you rake the snow, and then you burn the snow, Billable.
Clean up leaves, Sparky. Oh.
Should anybody be burning leaves right now where you are? I mean, isn't that a no-no? Isn't that how massive brush fires start?
Well, you'd be happy to notice this. The Cal Fire has went into the since we had that big rainstorm. We're out of fire season now in Northern California. We went back in for a while a couple weeks ago, but now they're out. And you have to call the Air Quality Board to see if it's a burn day. In the city limits of Red Bluff, you can't burn, but in the county, you can burn. But you're supposed to have your burn done by 5 o'clock. And I always wait till I get a south wind so it blows everything towards the cattle ranch. I got a big pile of oak leaves that I tried to burn the other day, and they weren't cooperating, so I just put it out because they were still wet from the first storm we had.
You get a lot of leaves on your property, Sparky?
Well, if you'd ever see this, I got a valley oak tree that's everybody says, oh, it's got to be. Somebody said, oh, well, one neighbor, a friend that comes over and does a pomegranate, he says, well, that tree's got to be like 150 years old. It's huge, and it dumps a lot of acorns this year and a ton of leaves. So I use my Ego blower on my circle driveway I got out there, and I blew all the leaves in one place, and I got a pile that's about 6 foot round and about, well, 3 foot high of oak leaves.
Ah.
And by the way, Stephen New York says, burn snow, pshaw. The House of Commons in Canada gets its heat from maple syrup burning lamps.
Oh, there you go. Now that makes sense. Cowbell.
Yep. Lee in New York, on the other hand, says, raking snow. If you don't rake the snow, you might get an avalanche. Jesus.
Aren't we going to be so happy when this motherfucker's gone? I mean, the comedians are going to be crying. They're going to be in tough, dire straits.
Oh, we're going to be playing a bunch of nice tunes on Inauguration Day.
Oh, the filmmakers are, you know, they're rubbing their chops, man. I know Oliver Stone's getting a hard on right now, man.
With all the Trump exposé.
This is going to make one hell of a movie.
And there's sub-movies, you know?
Yeah.
The Ryan Zinke story, can you imagine?
Yeah, and Steve, you're already storyboarding it, aren't you, brother?
Yes, sir. I've got it mapped out, man.
Call me. But Jeremy in Vermont says, damn it, I want low, real goddamn snowgrass. So you mow the snow so Buddy the Beefalo can get through to it, to the grass.
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
I wanted to ask Darlene if before he took off, he said, beep, beep.
I don't know. Maybe. You never know.
You know, you'd think that they'd just get it. You'd think that they'd just get a girl beefalo and put her in the corral there and, you know, get her to, yeah. You know, one of those beefaloes with the really big eyelashes and, you know, problem solved.
That's right. Brilliant.
I keep saying if you get two cow dogs out there and a Wrangler, you'd have that.
Well, they got to find
that
it first.
Trailer within seconds.
Yeah, probably so. They're probably going to get to that point.
Bobby, and you make it. You need to join the task force. The buddy task force.
You know how much those cattle dogs sell for?
I don't know.
They have the bull and gelding show here, sale here every year, and they sell cattle dogs. Some of them go for $25,000.
Wow.
These are the Australian cattle dogs?
Yeah, and the border collies.
Yeah, my brother had an Australian cattle dog, and she was sweet. She was a great dog. They're good dogs, you know?
My sister had a border collie, I mean, years ago, and I had a German shepherd. And I'd go down there for Christmas. They had an 8-acre ranch, airy little mini ranch thing. And they had sheep. Well, they had this little border collie named Heidi. And that damn dog tried to herd my German Shepherd all over the yard. Run up, bite his back, her back legs. She'd turn around, the dog would be gone. That's what they do.
Yeah. My dog Diamond did that with my other two dogs. She's an Australian Shepherd, too. Same thing.
It's just like a natural instinct with those dogs.
Yeah.
Like I said, if you had two of them on Buddy, man, they could get move him anywhere.
Yeah, my
That's
dog.
That's a great idea.
My German Shepherd Bella tries to herd the older William, like a 12-year-old dog. So, you know, I see that. You know how they do herding.
What does William say about that, Bilbo?
He complains quite vociferously, barks a lot. Basically barks and says, get the hell away from me, you whippersnapper, you know?
Yeah,
hey, nice picture you posted of your dog in your new Volkswagen.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, the dog is beautiful.
And what kind of VW is it?
Well, the newer one is a luxury CC, and the older one is a 68 Bug, something like that. But she just went into heat like about a month ago. We didn't even know she was in heat. And we had her playing with a Dalmatian next door who was about like a year old. So we're hoping
we're
not going to have Dalmatian Shepherds or whatever, you know, Dalma Shepherds or whatever. Don't need that, you know.
No, don't need that.
You have to have her check.
Oh, hey, I got good news. We're getting ever so much closer to finishing Mark's Drop a Boulder on 2020 challenge. Thank you to different Mark for jumping in. We are now at only... 35 bucks to go. 35 bucks finishes the challenge, and you know, with I think 2.5 minutes left in the program. So thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly for getting us that much closer.
So can you stay late, Bob, or are you gonna cut out?
Agnes is waiting for me with the season finale episode of The Mandalorian fired up, and you know, got to protect the child. But no,
is that on Netflix as well?
No, it's just Disney Plus, which is a pain in the ass. But
unless you know the secret stuff,
stick around for the back porch if you want to learn the secret stuff from Sparky.
Oh, okay, because I just don't want to even sign up for free for 30 days to.
Oh, no, that just turns into a giant pain in the ass. But I tell you what, the way I look at The Mandalorian is it's the best cowboy western that's been produced in a generation for TV. I mean, sure, there's laser beams and a little tiny Yoda, but it's a western.
It's better than Firefly.
Well, it's actually kind of got some of the same vibes. Beat up spaceship, but you know, you don't have that crew aspect of it. It's, you know, because the Mandalorian's a loner. More than anything else, for people of a certain age, it reminds me of Have Gun Will Travel with Richard Boone. You know, the Paladin. I mentioned that before, and it partakes. I think the people who created it. Borrowed freely from other ideas. For instance, there's, you know, the Paladin. I mean, the Mandalorian is a Paladin. There's, you know, the outpost planets are kind of rough, like in Firefly. I mean, Firefly was a Western too. But you know, the best part of it is that they gave it a chance to succeed. You know, I'm still pissed off that they, and Agnes is too, that, you know, they just quit on Firefly. That was a brilliant show.
Yep.
It's really enjoyable to watch. And by the way, if you go in for like Christmas movies and things like that, on the suggestion of a dear friend, we watched the other night an animated Christmas movie called Klaus, K-L-A-U-S. And it is, it's really good. It's sort of an alternative origin story of Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to watch. Got some great voice talent. Joan Cusack. Who else? Norm MacDonald. It's really, really good. And, you know, if you got like kids or grandkids around, they'll enjoy it. And it was nominated last year for an Academy Award.
Wow.
And I'd never heard of it, but Agnes had. And of course we did our, and I thought of Darlene because I did our annual, one of my very favorite old Christmas movies is called Christmas in Connecticut. And so Agnes and I watched that the other night, and it was a lot of fun. That's just a great, wacky, zany movie. And Barbara Stanwyck's fantastic, and Dennis Morgan's good, and all those character bit players from Warner Brothers, at least one of whom, S.K., I can't remember his last name, you see, he's the maitre d' in Rick's Café Américain in Casablanca, and he's the chef. And it's World War II era, and it was really weird to watch because it's a foodie movie. And
I've never seen it.
Really?
Yeah, and probably it's probably not based in Connecticut. Like Beetlejuice, wasn't Beetlejuice supposedly based in Connecticut? It wasn't, because when I just looking at the aerial shots, I'm like, that's not Connecticut.
Well, I mean, this is all soundstage with soap powder snow and stuff. But the setup for it is that Barbara Stanwyck plays a magazine writer who's supposed to be this fabulous homemaker. And she talks about what she did for baby, and there's a new baby involved. Well, the problem is she lives in a cold water flat in New York, and she doesn't have a baby. And her boss, who is played by Sidney Greenstreet, again, Warner Brothers, contract players, is a fabulously rich publisher, and he arranges for her to provide, because he doesn't know she's a fraud either, and he arranges for her to provide the perfect Connecticut country Christmas. And the other problem is she doesn't have a farm in Connecticut either. And so it's just mad and wacky and hijinks and you know, just like any good Shakespeare play, there's falling and mistaken identities and hidden motives and everything works out in the end, of course. But it's just a delightful little film. If you've never seen it, you should check it out.
Yeah, I'm gonna do that instead of like I'll watch The Grinch or something, the one that Jim Carrey did. So maybe I'll swap that out and watch Christmas in Connecticut. I probably have seen it, but just haven't seen it in a long time, and probably can't remember it as in terms of the plot as you describe. I assume it's a black and white.
Oh yes,
it's, yeah,
and it, I mean it really yeah. is. It's as classic as classic can be. And
yeah, and
Barbara
Stanwyck
was a magnificent actor.
Yeah, and I mean, I can think of a farm the next town over that probably would fit that mold and be a perfect setting for something like that. But you know, that's up in where I live in the northwest corner, as most of Connecticut's built up, and except for my side of the state and the eastern side of the state, closer to Rhode Island, but most of it is very densely populated and built up. But there are some very charming areas, the beautiful countryside that still somewhat remain pristine, but that's because we have a lot of the wealthiest people that live in these areas, including Meryl Streep. You know, we've got the Bacons, Kevin Bacon and his wife Kira Sedgwick. They live in my area.
Wow, you really do get to live 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon?
Yes, I do.
Well done.
I do. And I actually, yeah,
Yeah, he was actually in my town. Apparently, he was at the famous fair that we have here. When I was there, I didn't see him, but yeah, some I don't hobnob with them, obviously, but they do live in this area.
Well, you know? one of the funny things about watching it this time through is you'll see, like I said, there's just tons of, you know, soap flake snow. But I looked at Agnes and I said, you know, I bet it doesn't snow like that in Connecticut anymore either. And then lo and behold, you guys got hammered.
Well, but she is right to a certain degree. It doesn't as much, but we did get hammered this time around, but not in comparison to, like, for example, sections of New York. They got upwards of 42 inches, which is just unbelievable, and more in the northern part of New York. But, you know, I see old photos, you know, black and white photos of the snowfalls were unbelievable. I mean, we're talking several feet high. And it's,
yeah, all that Courier and Ives stuff.
Yeah, but even like on steroids, where it's not as quaint and charming as the Courier and Ives photos, but
it's just nasty.
Sorry, paintings and stuff. But yeah, we don't see. I don't know what that is.
Oh, that was Jeremy. That was
somebody
Jeremy
was driving,
in.
I think.
Yeah, yeah, but we don't
flying
see
that jet plane.
We don't
air
see
shooting.
That. So.
Yeah,
I think it was snowplow.
That's become considerably more rare, hasn't it, Darlene?
Yes, it has. I mean, we just came out of a drought. Most of this year we spent in drought conditions. I think we're fine now. We made up the deficit, which I think reached about 12 inches of a rain deficit, but I think we're okay now.
Of course.
And the guy from Casablanca, the great character actor S.Z. Sakal. Yeah, and you know, really, really thick Eastern European accent, just a marvelous actor. I'm trying to see here if I can pull up the trailer for it because yeah. I love the trailers that went with the movies from that era.
I am driving, but I have to answer my kids. I'm going to say that if everybody looks at the sky Monday night, if you can see it, Saturn and Jupiter will be on top of each other, be the brightest star in the sky. It won't be that way again until 2080, and it wasn't that bright in 2,400 years.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I saw that. That's really cool. And we got it didn't quite reach here, but I think last weekend there was a whole bunch of the northern United States that got to see the northern lights for a change.
And there was an eclipse last Saturday too, I think, but I missed it because it clouded over 3 hours where it happened.
That's cool. Thanks for the tip. Monday?
Yeah, Monday night.
Okay,
yes,
good.
Yes, please. The solstice, exactly, yep.
Awesome. I hope it'll be clear here. Portland is a crapshoot. We've had clear skies at night and a lot of cloudy ones, too.
Here's the trailer. And by the way, thanks to Labor Man. Thank you very kindly, Labor Man. Our buddy Gary out in New Mexico. We have met Mark's Drop a Boulder on 2020 Challenge. Thank you so, so much. Awesome. So here's the Christmas in Connecticut trailer. Warner Brothers invite you to spend a very merry... Turn the page. Christmas in Connecticut.
Who said there isn't any Santa Claus? Look what I found in my stocking.
Heaven help a sailor on a Christmas like this.
This is the jolliest, merriest Christmas I ever spent.
Nah. It is so, so romantic. It gives me pimples all over the goose.
Yeah. I'm as free as a bird.
Oh, that's what you think.
Finding the right man on the wrong honeymoon. Dennis Morgan. Teaching her all about men the Navy way.
Don't
Don't you come near me, you sea wolf. After the way you've deceived me,
I
warn you, if you take another step, I'll scream.
And how you'll scream when Santa Claus brings a bachelor girl, a sweetheart, a husband, and two babies for Christmas. Celebrating, and we do mean celebrating. ...1945. It's a surprise package from Warner Brothers. It's a good
one. Are you under contract with Warner Brothers, by chance?
Sadly, no, but I'm open to suggestions.
Did the Lincoln Project ever hire you? I don't think so.
They never came through either, damn it.
Damn it, that's not fair.
Audio you played, awesome. It's like Big Sky kind of music movie type.
Oh, I can't. If you watch it, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. I mean, you have to watch it with the understanding we're talking about an entirely different time. And so, you know, like, a Navy man, a husband, and two babies for Christmas. You know, wow, really? Sexism much? But it's just cute as hell. And Darlene, they costumed Barbara Stanwyck just,
I'm sure.
Gorgeous.
I'm sure. Yeah. And she's sassy enough, too, where sounds like she can hold her own. So, you know.
Yeah. No, she does, because she would go on to run the ranch in the Big Valley, and any woman who can do that, well.
Yeah, exactly, and that's probably a movie that I would have. And again, we got to have a conversation with your friend Dan Fisher about colorization.
He's coming back this Wednesday. We're going to do probably the biggest Christmas production we've ever attempted, and Dan's been pulling together fun stuff for us to talk about, and we got a couple of little scripts. He's going to do a little reading, I'm going to do a little reading, and it should just be fun all the way around. And hey, we might even have a special guest to chime in for to the extent that Skype can make this happen, that the audio will come through, just to sing us a tune.
Oh, that's nice. Sounds really nice. Yeah.
It should be a blast.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, and by the way, as for the Aurora Borealis, Lee was watching, and he said, it was a Trump light show. A lot of promise, but nothing was delivered. Yeah, so, because there was a huge electromagnetic storm on the sun, and it ejected a ton of plasma.
Well, at least there was no carnage.
Yeah, American or otherwise, right, Billable? But thanks, everybody. I'm going to roll on out of here. I managed to get it up to 65 degrees in the Fabulous Horn Studios, but that won't last because, well, we're about at the end of the tank of gas, and I try to conserve those for the program. But thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Remember, the back porch will continue after the program is over, so if you're too shy to be heard on the air, the back porch is open. It's the same button, same link at headon.live. And again, thanks to all of you who keep the program going with your subscriptions via PayPal, Patreon. Remember, there's two really delicious offers on the table, courtesy of Steve in New York. One at a $15 subscription and another at a $20 subscription. And this involves considerable work on Steve's part. So, he'd love to see more participation in the community and, new folks adding in to the ongoing effort to keep this whole thing, keep all the plates spinning on all the sticks. Thank you, Steve, so much. And, thank you to whoever jumps in on these two. If you want to jump in and subscribe at 15 or 20 bucks, send me a note, give me your address so I can send it to Steve. Like I said, the addresses have already gone out to Paul from Parts Unknown for Randy and Jeremy's Paulman's. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. I cherish our time together every evening in these 3 hours, and I love hearing from you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. And thanks to Sparky moderating around the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. I don't know if you know this, but there was a huge derailment in Harlan County, Kentucky, of a massive coal train. So there's filthy coal dumped all over the place in Harlan County right now. Because, well, I guess that coal won't be keeping the lights on for a while. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Thank you all so much. Please stay safe. Best way to stay safe is to stay home. And, of course, if you can't stay home, you got to take every possible precaution. Wear your mask, wear your gloves, hand sanitize frequently, wash your hands, don't touch your face, maintain your social distance, 10 feet if you're with people wearing masks, and just flat out don't be anywhere there are people who aren't, if you can possibly avoid them. And naturally, of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, you know what, we set up a shell corporation and we built $617 million out of the maggot rubes, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Later, everybody. Have a great weekend.